We'll call the meeting to order. It's December 2nd, 2021. We'll call the meeting to order. We'll use 9:06 as the starting time. And I welcome everybody here this morning. I know in the last few months across the state of Texas, there have been several deaths in the fire service. So if you wouldn't mind, I would like for everybody just to give a moment of silence in recognition of the members we've lost and the families at this time of year. Thank you.
Okay. Item number one, roll call and excuse of committee members. Daniel Anderson.
Here.
Jason Collier.
Present.
Vince Abrigo.
Yes, sir, present.
Antonio Ramos.
Present.
Jim Reedy.
Here.
Presiding Officer Daniel Deere.
Present.
Here. And Keith Schmidt, present.
So Ken Swindle, if y'all keep him in our prayers as well, he's getting ready to have a surgical procedure here in just a few days. So he was unable to make the meeting, so he's excused. And also this morning, Daniel Anderson was mandatorily hired back at work, so he's not able to get away. I'm sorry, Daniel Buford.
Sorry.
Yeah, wish you were getting that money, huh, Dan?
Yes, sir.
You ready for item number two?
Yes, sir.
Adoption of the June 10, 2021 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
Motion to approve, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I have a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Chief Collier's seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carried.
Item number three, request from Curtis Dunn, Firefighter Cancer Support Network, regarding firefighter training program.
Okay, Curtis, welcome.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to stand in the middle if that's all right for everybody. I'll make a turn around. I think you can hear me. I have a deep enough voice. We presented this to the commission a couple months ago.
Here, Curtis.
We can't hear you. We got to get you on the reference.
Okay, there we go. So I was here a couple months ago, presented to the commissioners, and then I missed last month. Things came up, we couldn't get down to present to you guys. This program, and in a way it was a blessing because this program has now been revamped. It's all been redone, the slides are done, it's a better program. I'm not going to sit here and do the whole hour and a half presentation. I'm not going to do the videos except for one that I want you guys to see. But I am going to go through the slides so you can take a look at them, see what we do teach. What we'd like to see, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, we now have an MOU with the IAFF, the IAFC. And so we have been doing this for 16 years. It's we do classes. We have mentor programs that we offer any firefighter or their family that has cancer. So it's a great organization, and we're great friends with the Chiefs and the International. So we'd like to see this as a training tool for the firefighters in Texas. We'd like to see this be a mandatory CE for the firefighters in Texas. Eventually, my pipe dream, if I live this long and things, is to get this into fire schools, where like at home, I know in the Metroplex, I teach it. I know Jim does San Antonio. I do Dallas sometimes when I get in. McDade gets me in to teach our rookie class, Fort Worth, Arlington. So we teach this to some of the rookie schools in the Metroplex. I would really like to see this be part of graduation from rookie school. So we'll go ahead and start. Any questions on the organization or anything? Jim is part of my organization. He takes care of some of the stuff down in San Antonio for me. He does good work. Daniel Buford helps. He's not here. So, but just we have a great organization in the state of Texas. Oop, we're going to have to come point at that thing, aren't I? Do I have to stand close to it? Did I kill it? There you go. All right. Again, my name is Curtis Dunn. I'm the Vice President of the FCSN. I'm retired lieutenant from the Arlington, Texas Fire Department. I was there 36 years. I am a third generation. My father was a military firefighter and a fire chief of Leon Valley, Texas for 20 years. And I'm the Vice President Emeritus for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. So, guys, what this class does is gives you 11 objectives. It defines the scope and occupational cancer problems in the fire service. we do go into the scientific research, but not so much. There's too many. It's like I liken it to Las Vegas. You go to Las Vegas, play blackjack, and you ask the dealer, well, what's the book say on this? And the dealer's going to say, well, there's 100 books on it. So really, there's a lot of research out there. I encourage everybody to do their own to see if it helps. Routes of exposure, occupational exposure, understand the modifiable risks, describe exposure reduction. We identify the best practices in the fire service to reduce those. We do try to go into presumptive legislation, but 50 states have 50 different legislations. Understand the importance of annual medical exams and early detections, and discuss the need of cultural changes, and then we talk about our FCSN survivorships. So the scope of the problem, guys, is cancer is more than 100 related diseases that stem genetic changes. Such changes are caused by the environment or genetic triggers that allow it to divide it without stopping. Then you have cancer. Everybody has a genetic cell in their body that is basically just sitting there waiting to start metastasizing, and whatever triggers it could trigger it. Then it goes, as it says, it goes into dividing the cells and goes into full-blown cancer. So what the causes and concerns, your DNA, smoking, dipping, the sun, drinking, alcohol, what's in the air, and then that, and I think I said it last time I was here, that sandwich that I've been in 50-something states looking for, and I still can't find it. But one day, it looks like a firehouse sandwich. So guys, line of duty, heart attacks, well, I've always been, we know there's enough seniority in this room, but we know that heart attacks for the longest time was number one killer of firefighters in America. 52%. In 2019, according to the United States Fire Administration, where line-of-duty deaths were caused by heart attacks. Since 2002 to 2020, the IFF Memorial Wall, line-of-duty deaths are 67% because of cancer. So 40% of the general population will be diagnosed with cancer. Firefighters have a 9% higher risk of being diagnosed and a 14% higher mortality rate than the general population. So that's the problem we have, and I know Jim knows it. I know Chief DeVere knows that fighting to get these benefits for our firefighters is the hardest thing we do in the state of Texas. We have a presumptive law that lists 11 cancers, and we're still getting denied by TML. So we fight that every time we have a cancer case in Texas. So scientific research, guys, there's so many out there, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. We do teach it. We have a training manual that teaches things like this. But, again, I want to be brief so you guys can get on with the real business here. So the scientific research is here's the cases that you could find. This it does read. It's the cohort study in U.S. versus Daniels. There's so many. Again, so many scientific research out there that we don't try to get into all of them. Cancer is the top causing firefighter line of duty death. It's the most dangerous under-recognized threat for the health and safety of our firefighters. I'm going to play this video. It's going to be hard to hear, so try to listen as good as you can. This is talking about the new firefighter registry that's now in effect. And we're trying to get people to put this, to send these in.
As firefighters, we know the risks of a fire ground. But what about the risks we carry home with us? Firefighters are exposed to chemicals that increase our chances of getting cancer. And there are many unanswered questions about how cancer risk may vary across our nation's diverse fire service. That's where you come in. You can help the fire service better understand how our work affects our risk of getting cancer and how to lower this risk. Thanks to legislation and support from leaders in the fire service, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health oversees the National Firefighter Registry to track cancer and identify cancer risk factors among U.S. firefighters. The registry is for all firefighters, paid or volunteer, active or retired, with or without cancer. The more of us that sign up, the stronger the evidence will be to help firefighters protect ourselves from developing cancer in the line of duty. Every day, firefighters like you put their lives on the line to help others. Now, it's time to help our own community and protect future generations of firefighters. Learn more about the National Firefighter Registry. Visit www.cdc.gov/NFR.
Guys, I encourage each and every one of you to go here and read about what's going on and encourage your guys to sign up for this. So it actually works. In 2020, it was established. The National Firefighter Registry was established. 2021 to 2023, it's been rolled out, and now we're enrolling firefighters. But if we don't get firefighters to enroll it in 2024, when the analysis and dissemination of the results comes out, we're not going to have any. So encourage your guys at work, encourage anybody you know that's in the fire service to sign up for this so that we can really have a true, accurate number of what's killing us and what's giving us cancer.
I actually sit on the stakeholder group for this.
Okay.
And the hardest part of what they're doing and what we're having to do is marketing it. Marketing it out to the fire service, one, because of the suspicion of giving your information in and the anonymity that people want, especially in the age of COVID. But it's marketing. That's the hardest part of this is marketing it out.
Well,
it's really your information just goes into an aggregate pool, basically, is what it is. So it will really help us, but yeah, it's hard to get the word out.
Yep, and like you said, Jim, I didn't know you were on it, but that's good because hopefully somebody like you can get this in the state of Texas. Guys, we've got to know what's causing what the registry is a good thing. I mean, this isn't, and I hate to say because it's such a touchy subject, this isn't a COVID vaccine. This is just your name, you know, and like you said, going into an aggregate detail so we can get numbers. That's what we need. We need numbers to prove, you know, that this is. This would make it a lot easier if one of your firefighters is diagnosed with cancer and getting it approved for something he deserves, and that's the money and the time.
I wonder if, Wisco, maybe if we can get Dr. Flint maybe to come in to the commissioners and maybe pitch it to the commissioners sometime. Sure. He's the one that runs this.
Yeah, but we can certainly push it out on our website and Facebook and all that. I mean, we can get the information out there too.
So, guys, routes of exposure, chronic exposure to heat, smoke, and toxins put firefighters at a very high risk of developing cancer. Inhalation, ingestion, and absorption of those toxins make their way into your bloodstream and stored in fat cells and organs. That's where the cell damage occurs that may lead to cancer. So it's not as much, and it tells you the 99% of the smoke particulates collected during overhaul, more or less than 1 micron in diameter. And it, to the naked eye, you don't see it. I mean, how many guys remember when you walk through a fire in the old days before we were told to wear our mask? It's nighttime, you got a flashlight, and all you see is these particles just floating through the room. And those are the ones you can see. So it's very important. That's why you'll see down the road, we preach wearing air packs and masks the whole time you're there, even for overhaul. Routes of exposure, inhalation, thermal absorption, secondary exposures, semi-volatile off-gassing. A lot of guys don't know that your bunker gear, and Jim, this is part of your major thing you've done, bunker gear off-gasses up to 8 hours after a fire. Those guys that think it looks cool to go in the grocery store wearing their bunker pants or things like that, the whole time you're after a fire, that's off-gassing into your groin area, off-gassing into your body. That's why we encourage getting that gear off immediately. As soon as the fire's over, get it bagged up, get it back to your station. Occupational exposures, generally the definition of occupational exposure is when a firefighter comes in direct contact with a disease-causing substance. And guys, if I'm going too fast, please stop me or raise your hand. I just want to give you guys time. This is what we will teach, and it again, it's an hour and a half to 2 hour PowerPoint presentation. So if I'm going a little too fast, if you have a question, please raise your hand. I'm just trying to get this out to see you can see what it is. So these are the occupational exposures that you deal with. The two biggest, they think the two biggest are carbon monoxide and hydrogen cyanide. To me, the benzene levels in fire stations are worse than anything else. The benzene levels at a fire. And God, Jim fought forever to get flame event systems in the San Antonio fire station. I don't think Dallas has all of them, do they, yet? They do have all of them now. So we're fighting the good fight, and it's there. But every time they start those diesel fire trucks up, benzene is released into the bay. And you're dealing with that for 24 hours. So every time you open the door, it goes into your living area, your kitchen, your bedroom. So that's the number one thing in firefighters that the benzene levels in fire stations that we're trying to do away with. How many people saw ice machines still in the bays? There's still a few of them around, guys. And Miami-Dade, Keith Tyson is our state director in Florida, got with Miami-Dade, and the Miami, was that cancer, what's the name, cancer cohort? What is that one that Doc runs?
Sylvester,
yeah. They took a glass of ice out of the ice in the bay, put it on the table, let it sit 8 hours, and when it melted, it had an oil sheen on top of it, and it had black floaties in the water. So they're in the process of moving all their ice machines out of the bays into the stations to get it out of that diesel smoke. Sorry. So there's absolutely no correlation between the levels from the air monitoring of CO and HCN and cancer toxins found in fires. That's because there's many other gases that your monitors don't have that are far more dangerous than those two. I mean, I can remember the old days, anybody that can, and I keep saying old days because I'm an old man, but they come through, the chief comes through with the CO monitor and says, all right, it's good, take your stuff off. And we don't do that anymore. We encourage that you wear your air mask and bunker gear all the way through your overhaul until you get outside in the clean air. Pinpointing the cause of cancer is difficult because firefighters are not exposed to just one agent. So occupational fires, food on the stove, guys. So many times you walk in the door with a pair of gloves on and just pick the pan up, carry it outside, and you're still breathing in those smokes. Think of the toxins that you're getting from those iron skillets, that Teflon pan that was on fire about 5 minutes before you got there. Diesel, again, I talked about that. I'm not going to kill it. But, again, it's to me, that's something that firefighters deal 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you don't have a diesel exhaust system in your station. Car fires, plastic, synthetic materials that produce toxins that are burning. These three guys have no air masks on. They're wearing their air packs with no masks. This is my Darwin Award winner. He's fighting a dumpster fire. He's got his pack on, his mask on, and his regulators hanging down around his waist. So, guys, you don't know what's in that dumpster. I mean, chemicals, drug paraphernalia, cleaning supplies. You'll hear down the road, you'll hear one of the Chief Finn say in Boston, and we do it in Arlington now, fight dumpster fires with a deck gun, with a deck-mounted gun. We turn them to the side, we put 500 gallons of water and drive off. Nobody has to get in it with a pike pole or a rubbish hook like we did in the old days. We climb in those things with a red line. So nowadays we encourage, if you've never done it, if you have anything in your fire department that you have for policy making, look at that. And, I mean, we did just a brief study, the union did, and found that our on-scene time reduced 20 minutes just by using a deck gun, filling it up, going filling up your truck and going home. Brush fires, we're finding now that wildfires probably cause carcinogens to humans. So we don't have a lot like this one in Texas. I think out in the down in the valley they may have some hills like that, and out in El Paso area, but ours are pretty much flat grass fires in Arlington. Jim, want to talk on this?
Sure.
Guys, PFAS, and I'm going to let Jim say a few things. We do talk about this, and it's a very, very, before Jim gets going, it's a very trying time between the IFF and things. So, Jim?
Well, so everybody here knows that, I'm assuming everybody knows that on the outside of your gear there is a water repellent. And so, back in the early 2000s, there was a water repellent applied to obviously repel moisture, protect the outside of the gear, and it's made of PFAS. And it's a certain chemical formula, like stain resistance and other things. But it repels chemicals, and it also repels moisture. It is in that same category as the types of bad PFAS chemicals that basically get in your body and never leave. And so as we've gone along, those chemicals have been discontinued, and now they're into another formula that has the half-life of that. But that's what that water repellent on the outside is. And these PFAS chemicals, the bad PFAS chemicals, the old ones, were linked to some cancers in the fire service. But those aren't being applied to the outside of the gear anymore. The technical part of it is that what's applied to the outside of your gear now is a PFAS, but it's nowhere near as dangerous as the old ones. And now what industry's going to is a non-PFAS durable water repellent. You'll see that on the outside of your gear as you buy new gear. That's just what's being sold now. It obviously doesn't repel hydrocarbons and liquids like the other one did, but that's coming along. So as the industry's come along, they're doing that. But PFAS chemicals, there's like 5,000 plus combinations of PFAS. Some are really bad for you, and some you have. We're sitting on top of some of them in here. You're sitting on top of it on the chairs, the carpet. Everything in society now has this PFAS molecule in it, and some are really bad and some aren't. And so in the fire service, we're exposed to it in two ways. The outside of the gear, the DWR, which they're now moving to remove that completely. The moisture barrier material, inside the moisture barrier, there's a membrane, and I liken it to what you wrap your pipes in, the Teflon tape that you wrap your pipes in. It's basically the same type of material, only formulated to have a one-way valve so that the vapor pressure will escape from the inside of your gear and allow you to cool a little bit, as opposed to the old days when we were wearing polyurethane. It felt like we were being wrapped like a potato in a microwave. So that's what's really going on in our industry. AFFF, in and of itself, is a very bad PFAS, and that's why you've seen it being removed from any military vehicle, firefighting vehicle. There's no more training with AFFF. Many states are outlawing it outright, and it also damages fire trucks, damages the seals inside the fire trucks. So AFFF foam and what we use in our gear is two different things, but a lot of times people try to mix it all together in one big barrel, I guess, for lack of a better term. So we are all trying to move towards removing all the dangerous PFASs and keeping the good ones. The PFAS that you use in your moisture barrier, the same material is also used in heart valves for infants. The same exact. So it's used everywhere. But all I would tell you is that if you're really interested in PFASs or you're really concerned, is to do some research. There is plenty of research out there. Not the talking head research, the actual scientific research, and it is very informed. So, in and of itself, I would wear my gear every day of the week without any kind of concern. I would put the guys that we had in gear. We never had any concern about any of it. So.
And to me, the FCSN doesn't take a stance on one way or the other, but my personal feeling is that. There's a lot more things out there that are going to kill you cancer-wise before the PFAS that's in the minute amount of PFAS that's in your bunker gear.
Yeah, the PFAS that's in your bunker gear, your body cannot absorb. It's not what they call bioavailable to your body. So, of course, the molecules will come off and it wears off and it gets on different things, just like the Teflon pans, just like anything else. But your body cannot absorb it biologically.
And those that do keep up with news, keep up with traits in the fire service, have to understand that the IAFF has a new executive board now, and they're trying to recover from the last regime, and he's trying to make this one of his stances, and we're not too sure that's a hill that we want to die on. So again, it's a big thing right now going on in the fire service. So as Jim said, take a look at it and read up on it. So the IAFF did a fluorescent screening test. Put a guy, when the full bunker gear is inside the screening room, and this is what where his absorption was. Most around his neck, some on his thighs, his lower legs. But this just shows that that we do absorb things even with Domex hoods, full bunker gear, a mask, and so we have to really do the things that are important to us. And there's a slide down the road of before you leave the scene of a fire, use wipes to clean yourself as best you can and go back and immediately take a shower.
So, Curtis, a note for this is, and this is an informative note for everybody, the NFPA committee is about 95% sure we're going to go to particulate blocking hoods as a mandatory, and the two-layer hoods are going to be gone. So that's coming down the next time. So most everybody has them anyway. So.
Yeah. So does Houston still wear them, those others?
No.
No.
No, they're not. You can't wear anything that doesn't meet the standards.
So post urine average 2.9 to 5.3 times higher than again. That's something you just need to read about the PFAS to get the statistics on it. So modifiable risk factors, smoking, drinking, food, exercise, and sunscreen. Dr. Hamrock is a physician in Boston, Massachusetts. He was a Boston firefighter for 10 years.
Now he is the physician for the Boston Fire Department as well as his own practice. He says it's pretty simple. If you smoke, you're buying yourself a trip to the cancer ward. I sit here and look at you and tell you I got a friend that's 65 years old, smoked for 40 years, and he's in better shape than I am probably. So I don't know how it works. I know people that have smoked that died of lung cancer at 40. So I just know that he feels, in his professional opinion, that if you smoke, it's a trip to the cancer ward. So alcohol, colon cancer, esophageal cancer, you're higher rate. If you take 3.5 drinks a day or higher, you're 213% higher hazard ratio on alcohol. Of course, you always got the firemen, so it's one a day. Okay, can I save them till Saturday? That's always the fireman question of it. So sunscreen, guys, we carry it on our rigs everywhere we go. If we're out doing fill the boot, if we're out on a major accident, we're going to be there a while waiting on a wreck or whatever. We put sunscreen on if we don't have our bunkers on. So nutrition's in every other element of human performance. In the Boston Fire Department, they say eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And I always get the look on that one. I do notice going into fire departments now and teaching this class that the eating habits of the fire service have changed. The vitamins that you see on the wall, on the counters of the day room, the kitchen, the guys are trying to eat better. Hell, we fried everything in the old days. I mean, we would have fried a salad if we could have figured out how to do it. But that was just the way of the fire service. We didn't eat chicken. We fried chicken. We didn't eat fish. We fried fish. So the habits have changed in the fire service, and it's a good change. Fitness is about creating sustainable lifestyle changes, more improved quality of life. It lowers your risk of cancer from 10 to 50%. Most fire departments nowadays have a physical fitness program and physicals. In Arlington, Texas, we have a great physical. We get it every year. It's changed. We're trying to adopt the one you'll see here in just a little bit. So sleep, we're finding now that the modifiable risk factors in your sleep also affect if you're going to get cancer or not. They're saying that researchers found that 37% of the firefighters, of the 7,000 firefighters in 66 fire departments they tested, were positive for at least one sleep problem. The study revealed that more than 80% were positive for common sleep disorders and were undiagnosed or untreated. I always ask, how many people sleep with a CPAP? Anybody? Wow, that's amazing. Usually I get one or two. You say researchers had 42 healthy men awake between the hours of 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. And I always ask the guys in my class, mostly they're line of duty firefighters, does that number sound familiar to any of them? Because that's pretty much the busy time of the fire service, on a Friday and Saturday night especially. So the results showed 77% reduction of cancer-fighting immune cells, known as the natural killer, after one night of being up from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. Your risk for cancers go up. The cells are best known for detecting and controlling early signs of cancer. So the best practices, again, these videos are all good. The computer over here has this program on it if anybody wants to download it. So I'm going to skip these. This one is, I'll tell you what, let's look at this because this guy's, you got time? We got time for this? Mike? You got time to do this?
Sure.
All right. So
This is super invisible powder that's used actually for theft detection and cash, but one of the things we're trying to simulate is pretending that this is black soot, just the type of same type of soot that comes off combustible or burning materials you would encounter in a fire incident response. The initiative actually came to us right, from the Palm Beach County Fire Rescue Department. They were very interested in understanding about how what they did for work was impacting their health, specifically how maybe being a firefighter or an EMS responder may increase their risk for cancer. One of the things we were trying to do today is figure out, is there a way we can demonstrate how maybe cancerous materials are transferred from a fire incident response back to the fire station and personal vehicle. And so today was really a teaching exercise and a scientific exercise of trying to see how we demonstrate where soot, represented by this invisible dye, might be transferring from when they go to respond to a fire and come back to the fire station. So the goal today was trying to be able to identify, can we feasibly show how soot is transferred from a fire incident response back to their truck and back to the fire station. Start going through the different scenarios of post-decon into the fire engine, back into the bunk, into the restrooms, back here to the coffee table, it starts becoming less visible to the naked eye. But that powder that is invisible over chronic exposure could be potentially causing cellular changes that we just don't know about yet. And hopefully through some of our studies, we can start identifying those changes. For us, because I anticipated, you know, some demonstration of how much dye would transfer. I didn't realize the breadth and scope of how much dye would spread within the different scenarios that we were shooting in, as well as continue to transfer on after the first fire engine truck. So for me, it was very impressive to see even some of the invisible dye transfer onto the bunks where they're sleeping at night. Even if it's a smaller quantity, you could imagine that low-dose chronic exposure of this dye might be potentially increasing the risk over time. We filmed today in the EMS's personal vehicle. You could easily see even fainter wisps of plume of dye on the ceiling as well as on the seat that were not direct contacts, but were physically visible on it, suggesting that the particulate moves around. So you might not visibly see soot, and in this case we got to see a dye, but that could potentially be increasing your cancer risk. The firefighter works as a fulmite and is transferring, you know, carcinogen from where their place of work back to their personal home. So we had an opportunity to have a child with us today to be able to demonstrate maybe what happens in passing some of that soot using a soccer ball. So we were able to have a child play with one of the EMS firefighters with that soccer ball, and we were able to see a second degree transfer of this invisible dye, i.e. the soot, transfer from the EMS to the soccer ball and to the child. One of the activities that I hope arises from this video that we're producing is that firefighters are a little bit more cognizant about how hygiene is a very important aspect, and decontamination is an important aspect of post-incident fire response, because it makes them a little bit more aware of not only of the soot that they bring back into the fire station, but also what they might be taking to their personal homes and sharing with their families through secondary and tertiary contact of this soot on their own person. And I hope that the firefighters see that as a way of creating an opportunity for awareness and discussion of how we improve hygiene and decontamination within the fire service.
Maybe this video is one of the more important ones we have because, again, when we teach this class, we're teaching it to line firefighters usually. And to encourage these guys to quit carrying their bunker gear in the trunk of their car or carrying it home and putting it in the garage that off-gasses into your family's life. So we try to encourage these guys to keep those things either bagged up and sealed or keep them at the fire station. So
this place, Curtis, the Sylvester Cancer Research Center at the University of Miami has a kind of like a symposium every year. And if you're really interested in this, and especially the deeper dive into the medical scientific part of it, the registration is free. All you got to do is get yourself down there. It is very informative. It's not a beginner level deal, but it's very informative if you go sit through it. It's a couple days and get a lot of really good information. They do great work there too for us. So
it is.
It's in February, I think.
Yeah, it's
February in Miami. No doubt.
February 24th, 25th, and 26th. And again, it's free except for your travel and your hotel and things. But as Jim said, it's one heck of a class. And it's third year, I think, this year. Kudos to San Antonio and Dallas. Dr. is it Hambrock? I keep pronouncing her last name, the female in San Antonio.
No.
She's a intern, but she's dealing with San Antonio firefighters, their cancer.
Oh, they just brought her on, yeah.
Yeah, and they are on January the 6th, December the 6th, they're starting in San Antonio, and they're bringing in the female firefighters that are in rookie school. And it's not a complete baseline physical, but it's a baseline where they're going to do certain urinalysis, breast exams, and things like that. And then in 10 years or 5 years after being on the line, they're going to reevaluate them. So if they can tell what the wear and tear on female firefighters is through the fire service after they get out on the line. Vince, if you need her number and name, I'll get it to you.
Okay, yes, sir, please.
That way you can talk to her. Maybe you could. I know Dallas, Jim McDade, and her are working right now because I guess Dallas has a handful of females that just started or just starting rookie school. So it might be good for you too, Daniel, to talk to her. I can give you her number. But it's starting now, and she's trying to get Jim's busy, of course, hard to get them hooked up. So maybe you might be a quicker vent for her. But I think it's a great program. In Arlington, we just don't have any. Fort Worth only got a handful, so she wants to start San Antonio and Dallas.
So San Antonio has an occupational cancer committee solely dedicated to this subject. And the UT, the new UT Cancer Center in San Antonio approached the fire department about doing a joint participation. So Daniel Bartow is the chairman of that committee in San Antonio.
Yeah, I was down there last month, matter of fact. They have a great, great committee. She was the first time she was there. She brought in the green decon bucket that she had gotten from Sylvester.
Yep.
Just those who don't know, and it's on here. You'll see, we're not going to see the video, but this is what we want to teach everybody. This green bucket has a hose, a nozzle, cones inside it. Every fire truck in the state of Florida has one on it. And if they use it, they just wind it back up, they clean it off, and they use it again. But this was legislative driven. Every fire truck has one of these on it in the state of Florida now. So they, but I will, when we get done, Dan, and I'll get you guys her name and number if you want to reach out to her. So these are the 11 practices we encourage. Use your SCBA from initial attack all the way through overhaul. Not wearing your SCBA during active and post-fire environment is the most dangerous voluntary activity in the fire service today. And guys, fire investigators are just as important as firefighters on the line, because I can't tell you how many times I sit and watch fire investigators come onto the scene with nothing but a Tyvek suit and not even gloves and start digging through that stuff. And when they do, what are they doing? They're just churning up the particles. So we're even encouraging fire marshals, fire investigators, when they go into a fire, that if you're going to wear that Tyvek suit, put some gloves on, tape them up, boots. Wear a respirator, worst case scenario. I mean, I understand an air pack's heavy, but we encourage for you guys to look And we encourage fire departments to look at their fire marshal's office and their fire investigators and encourage those guys to come into that after that fire scene before they start doing overhaul. I mean, before they start doing that fire investigation, put some protection on. It's as important to us, to them, as it is to the firefighters. Do Grossfield Decon. You saw the video. There's a video on this that you won't see, but it talks about how to decon when you come off the fire truck. What we do is we set up, after the driver sets the pump in motion, gets the working line going, he takes a section, 100-foot section of a forestry hose, sets it out with some cones, a bucket with a brush, and some water if it's not too cold. And when you come out of the fire, you go through this decon alley and you get brushed off and hosed off to try to knock some of those decons off of you. So that we do encourage the on-field, on-site decon. Use cleaning wipes to remove as much soot as possible on your head, neck, jaw, throat, underarms, hands immediately after you get off on the scene. Change your clothes when you get back. Wash them immediately. Don't take them home and put them in your own washing machine, guys. That's what every city but Amarillo has has washer and dryers in their fire department. And I was shocked when I taught this class in Amarillo that they didn't have washer and dryers. So they've got 17 stations, so those guys have to take their stuff home somewhere. So we encourage, try to keep your stuff at the fire station and wash it. Shower thoroughly after the fire. Shower within the hour. Clean your PPE, your gloves, hoods, helmets. Don't take the contaminated gloves home. Don't take your gear home. Decon your apparatus, the interior of your apparatus. A lot of people don't think about that. Well, I taught this class in Green Bay, Wisconsin 2 years ago, and we went out at lunch, and we scrubbed with just a wash rag and soapy water. We scrubbed the inside, the roof, and the walls of this fire truck, and those rags, when we got done, were black. Because people don't think about deconning the inside of that fire apparatus. They're more interested in the outside. So keep your bunker gear out of the living quarters. I don't think anybody does that anymore. Stop using tobacco products. And my theory on tobacco products is, how many guys remember the old days when we smoked in the fire stations? Anybody? Was it after your time? I mean, you couldn't finish your dinner that somebody next to you wasn't already lighting up a cigarette. And that, to me, they got that out. That's good. To me, it's outside. It doesn't affect everybody now. Plano, if it's still in effect, Plano has a policy that you can't smoke on or off duty. They sign a waiver when they come on the job that says they will never smoke on or off duty again at risk for termination. But they have some of the best health insurance prices in the Metroplex. Use sunscreen. Hot zone, guys. Those that are in the area, the chiefs that build fire stations and things, this is something we just briefly talk about. Hot zone, warm zone, cold zone to protect your firefighters from that benzene out in the bay if you don't have the flammable systems. Best practice, guys, this is the absolute worst time to take off your SCBA during overhaul. Encourage them. Wear your SCBA during overhaul. Again, best practices, exhaust capture systems. To me, this, and again, I'm a fire lieutenant. I'm not an expert. But to me, there's a lot of these flammable vents. That's a brand name, of course. There's blowers. There's things that people will sell you to encourage you to do away with your exhaust system. But to me, this is the best exhaust system out there if you use it. I can't tell you how many times I walk into a fire station and see it dangling in the wind next to the exhaust pipe. God, we fought to get you those things, and we want to see everybody use them. Clean cab concept, guys, you can argue this all day long. To me, my opinion is it's not clean the first time you step back up in it after a fire. Because unless you're going to take a complete shower on a scene, you still get in that fire truck with carcinogen-filled Nomex uniforms. It does have a filtered ventilation system, which is good. I don't know too much about automatic windows on a fire truck. I mean, we break enough crap, but they're adding automatic windows on fire trucks now. When you put it in pump gear, the windows roll up. So that's one of the features on a clean cab concept. Don't put your dirty, contaminated equipment in place. Phoenix is even putting their air packs back in the fire trucks. They tried in the compartments. And, guys, Jim, you and I, one of my first shifts, the first fires, you know where my air pack was? In the back rear compartment.
In a plastic box.
Come on, they didn't have them then.
Oh.
Come
on. Well, okay, a few years into my career, after I quit feeding the horses. So, but yeah, so the air packs were in the boxes in the back of the rig already. As we progressed in the modern day fire service, then they put them in the seats behind you. But it's an argument to be had at another day. No gear beyond this point, guys. We do offer a lot of things with the FCSN. This to me is important to get out, is that there's no gear beyond the point. Try to keep your gear out of the day room, anywhere in the station except the bay. Preliminary exposure reductions. There we got hot zone, warm zone, cold zone. The decon. While exposure to toxins is inevitable, we should strive to reduce and eliminate them. Best practice, recommend implement a primary exposure reduction procedure preliminary exposure reduction reduces your surface of PAHs by 85% just doing water and a scrub brush. Bag your gear up. A lot of people still don't do this. We always encourage that, you know, those trash bags the city gives you, those huge big bags that fit the trash cans outside, we carry a roll on a fire truck. When we get done, we decon, we put our stuff in that bag, we seal it with duct tape, and we take it back to the station and clean it. That way it's not sitting under your feet off-gassing. It's not in the truck off-gassing while you're sitting there breathing. You know, you always got to, well, what if we get a call on the way back to the fire station? Well, what do you do if you get a call on the way back to the station and the stuff's sitting at your feet anyway? So it's an argument that you can have, but to me, this is the best way to protect you. This is another video on that same, about the gear and stuff. So shower within the hour, clean your body, then the tools. Possible, you should be kept assigned to the incident so cleaning the personal equipment can take place. Ensure the apparatus is decontaminated along with all the equipment that you used. How many we encourage? A lot of departments still don't have bunker gear cleaners, so we're lucky. I know that does Dallas have quite a few still?
So. Not at every station, but we do have quite a few.
I was Sioux City, Iowa last month, and they have a company that picks their stuff up after a fire, puts new stuff out. I think San Antonio does that too, right?
We're doing our own.
Yeah. Oh, they but.
But some. We're doing our own, picking it up, delivering it, and then taking it to a third-party cleaner.
Okay. So, to me, we had our meetings down there in that room, down on Presa, I guess, where all the gear stored and stuff, and it's bagged up and ready to go, looked like. So, presumption and exposure tracking. The blue is the states that do have some type of presumptive law. You can now add North Carolina to that. They just got theirs approved. I was in Asheville, North Carolina 3 weeks ago, and their governor came to announce that they now have a presumptive law, which I think works as good as what we have here. But when they get diagnosed with any cancer, they get a check. It's like an insurance policy, and a statewide group insurance policy. When diagnosed with cancer, they get paid. Presumptive exposure tracking. Yeah, and again, this goes back to the INFORS. I don't know how many people use INFORS, but it's part of INFORS. Early cancer detection. Perform monthly testicular self-exams, men and breast exams for women. Get annual medical exams. Discuss possible cancer risk with your physician. I don't know if you can read this. This is the recommended firefighter physical form that Dr. Hamrock put in place. Over here under annual exams, it's all the normal blood pressure, respiratory, heart rates. Over here is where it gets into the cancer. A comprehensive metabolic chemistry panel, liver function test, a hepatitis profile, a complete blood count, a thyroid panel. Thyroid is one of the top three killers in firefighters, or not killers, but cancers in firefighters in America. The hemoglobin, diabetes monitoring, fasted lipid profile, blood glucose, a urinalysis and biomarkers. And then a PSA. Guys, they're recommending a PSA for firefighters now at age 40. The low-dose CT scanning begins at age 50. A colonoscopy now again at 40 for firefighters. Exercise and stress cardiograms begin at 40. Mammograms for females begin at 35 now for firefighters. So that's if anybody wants a copy of that, we can print out a copy and get it to you, or I can email it to you. So the importance of medical exams, it's another video that Dr. Hamrock talks about, his importance of it. And again, once we, if we get this approved and you guys approve this as a CE that goes out to the firefighters, they will get this whole class. How we distribute it, we don't know yet, but that can be worked out. But all these videos are great that they would have to watch as we go through this. Screening test, early cancer detection. Guys, there's those tests out there that tell you one test for all cancers. Bullshit. What that one test tells you is that you have biomarkers for cancer. Just about everybody has biomarkers for cancer. So that test is nothing but telling you, now you go see a doctor. And they're making a lot of money doing that with fire in the fire service. The detect together is early detection finds cancer symptoms, the earliest possible stage, the benchmarks, working with your doctor, asking questions, voicing your concerns. The survival rates, again, it depends on where they find it. Guys, I get calls 5 or 6 times a week from firefighters with cancer that we help, that we get them a mentor, that we get them a toolbox, that we direct them. The biggest thing I tell them is if you're going to any hospital but the one in Houston,
MD Anderson,
Dallas. We just had a firefighter from Rowlett go over there at thyroid cancer. He was going to go to Rowlett, and he ends up going to Dallas. And again, having a over off of Stemmons.
UT Southwestern.
That's the one. UT Southwestern. So this is the best cancer hospital in Dallas, Houston. San Antonio has a good one now. So, but we recommend all these firefighters, if you can get in at UT Southwestern, go. Because they're firefighter friendly, and they take care of the firefighters, I think, as good as anywhere else you could go. Health change, the last thing, if you got something that we encourage, if something's bothering you for 2 weeks, get it checked out. Don't let it keep building up. One, remember what great feels like. Use the 2-week rule, and then share it with your doctor if something's bugging you. Thyroid cancer is probably not going to kill you. The doctor told me one day I had a thyroid scare. I had a nodule come up. She said, "Oh, if you got cancer, that's the one you want." I said, "No, you're wrong. I don't want any of them." But the thing about thyroid cancer is this kid from Rowlett's back to work after 2.5 months. They remove your thyroid. They stick a radiation pellet, sew you back up, put you in a room, dark room for 8 hours, and you go home and you start healing. So, but if there's something wrong, don't wait till that knot pops up on your throat. If you're having issues swallowing, things like that, guys, get checked out if it lasts more than 2 weeks. Again, pain, energy level, visible changes, bathroom habits. If you remember what great feels like, then get it fixed. Another video, a guy lost his father to cancer because his father let something go for longer than 2 weeks, and it turned out to be throat cancer, and he died within 2 months. So let the 2-week rule, the same way you track other important dates. Young lady lost her husband. The one I like to use in Texas is Crystal Woodcock. Her husband was a San Antonio firefighter that passed. She's a very good speaker. She helps us when we go out and do our classes. So prepare, share, and be aware. Share with your doctor if anything's going on with your body. Culture changes. Guys, the culture, the behavioral practices against the perception, the attitude, the beliefs, and the values. Behavior is influenced by our perceptions, our attitude, and our beliefs. Many focus on what they can see and don't focus on what's not observable. Tradition can live long in the fire service, and we've always been resistant to change. Last 30 to 40 years, the fire service experienced a culture change, most notable in the mid to 80s when bloodborne pathogens came in effect. So no longer was it considered acceptable to have blood on or bodily fluids on any exposed skin area. We started wearing gloves, goggles, things like that. The most persistent aspect of culture that divides it, the most dangerous phrase in language, is that's the way we've always done it. That saying right there has killed more firemen in America than anything else. Because why are you doing it that way? Well, that's because that's the way we've always done it. Why aren't you wearing a mask? Well, never have. So it's important that we change that culture in the fire service. Organizational culture changes. Secure buy-in. It starts with labor and management, but it's everybody. It's government leadership. It's company officers. Personal responsibility. and awareness and action and accountabilities. Guys, the most powerful leadership tool is your own personal example. John Wooden said that. Company level culture changes. The company level officers are the most critical piece of the cultural change on the campaign. Officers set the tone and their crews follow. But when I teach this class to rookie schools, I tell them, don't be insubordinate. But just because your company officer doesn't have his mask on during overhaul doesn't mean you shouldn't wear yours. That's not insubordinate. That's being smart. So we encourage these guys to wear their stuff out of rookie school. Survivorship. Mike Dubron is the founder of the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. In 2005, he's formed the FCSN to support cancer-stricken firemen and their families. We're in our 16th year. The FCN has operations in 44 states and parts of Canada. The IAFF Online Cancer Awareness Prevention Course is coming up in January. The whole month of January, you can go to the IAFF website or the FCSN website, and it's going to be a cancer awareness for the whole month of January. It's going to be both organizations. There'll be videos. There'll be table talk that you can download and talk about in the morning over coffee. There'll be podcast. Crystal and Woody's best friend.
Griffin.
Mark, is it Mark? No.
Sean Griffin.
They have a podcast. So San Antonio's people are going to have a podcast. So they're doing a great awareness for cancer. It starts the 2nd of January and goes for the whole month. This is our second year. We're hoping it's better. Mike is retired now. He was a cancer. He had diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer. Told him he had less than a year to live. He's now 15 years cancer free. He's retired now. He was a helicopter paramedic crew chief on a helicopter in L.A. County for 12 years at the end of his career. And he is now still the founder, but we have an executive board now that has taken over and running the organization for him. What did I do? What happened? It's not clicking.
Time down.
So the role of Cancer Network, the FCN Signature Toolbox, is offered free of charge to firefighters and their family with diagnosed with cancer. If you go to the website, the FCSN website, or call someone that you know with the Cancer Network, we'll have the toolbox to you in 7 to 10 days. The biggest thing that we brag on this toolbox is the survivor's guide that you'll see just to the right of the two toolboxes. There's materials in there that helps you as a cancer helps you to survive the cancer. It talks about FMLA, how do you talk to your family, how do you talk to your friends around the fire service about it. We also provide badge to badge. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network does not disallow that. Once you have it, it's yours. We ask that you don't change some of the, if you could keep the slides at least familiar to ours.
Well, no, I don't say take anything out, but add in bullet points to where in our state, since we follow NFPA, This is what the requirement is.
Well, there's no reason why you can't add anything to it.
Okay.
There's nothing. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network has not. There's no way that we've done it. So you can. Yes, you can change. I'm trying to think of the wording. Add to it. Yes, you may add to it. There's a way to go into it. You can click on the top. I'm a computer illiterate. Click on the top somehow, and you can add. And you can add slides.
It's very well done.
You guys are about the fourth group that has seen that. That's our newest. The slides have all been brightened up, and the logos have been, we have a new logo. It's been changed. So this is actually the fourth group to see this new PowerPoint. Also, we can offer train-the-trainer manuals. We can download so that they could print out the train-the-trainer manuals so they could have other things to talk about on the slides if they want to. The training divisions can download it and can bring in guys for EMSCEs or whatever, and they can do it themselves. Or, like us, we do. Yes, sir. Sorry.
Curtis, I just want to make sure I was clear on something that you asked. You had made a comment a few minutes ago about you would like to see this program similar to the traffic incident management where it's done annually, but the traffic incident management program is not an annual CE.
Okay, that was my mistake.
It's a one and done currently. So are you asking or proposing that we introduce this to the fire service in Texas, or that it be done annually, that each firefighter would view this presentation each year as part of their CE.
I think that with the change in cancer awareness and things, how that it to me it's an ever changing program. The death, you know, the stats and stuff. It could be possibly turned into a yearly thing, but I think I would just want to see it get out at least one time. It doesn't have to be. I was thinking yearly. I say yearly is because we change it yearly to update the information and things like that. So. But it could be just an additional. We could add, hey, here's what we added this year. If you want to do it, do it. If not, then it's we won't, because we, you have to remember, we travel and teach this, mm-hmm. So we have to have it updated, you know, yearly to keep the numbers accurate and things like that. So it's, as Jeff said, it'd be great to have it specific for Texas, because I can't do a specific for Texas, because again, I'm out, as I said, Sioux City, Green Bay, Asheville. We get out, we try as much. People call and ask for it. We try to go give it to them. But I think, Jim, the point you made is, yes, I think in the state of Texas, the size of Texas, when you can consider professional firefighters and volunteer firefighters, combination fire departments, ESDs, that it has to be available by video.
The other question I have is, you were talking about the toolboxes that you send out. Who funds? Where do you get your funding?
We're a 501(c). We depend on donations. Like I'm going on December the 7th, I'm going to Marble Falls. They had a fundraiser, and they're going to present a $5,000 check to us. That toolbox is about $100, $150 a toolbox with everything that's inside it to send it out. When we used to have our gala before COVID, we had a large gala in L.A. People come in and they start selling, you know, like an auction.
And so it's all through donations?
Yes, sir.
And you don't have a primary sponsor?
We just got $1 million grant for education. We're working with Sarah Janke, uh-huh. and her organization to try to get things out to this. Right now we are applying for more grants, and one of the grants is going to be a toolbox grant. Okay. So that way, I mean, it's hard. Believe me, it's I know that the American Cancer Society right now is struggling financially, although they're partnering with the IFF as we speak on a video. We have three paid employees that are contract labor. One works is our director of sending out the toolboxes. When we get requests, we forward them to her. She sends them out. We used to have a paid girl that did fundraising, but she's gone. We have one now that does the contract sponsors. We have corporate sponsors that we still can do, and that's how we get our money for that kind of stuff. And then of course, our treasurer is yesterday. Is that me?
Yeah. Have you moved one way or the other? All
right. Yesterday we just voted to bring on a board of directors. That it's going to help guide us into the future for financial and things like that. Some people from large corporations. So that's how we get our financing.
Okay.
So Brian Frieders is our president. He's a retired fire chief from Pasadena, California. He lives in Tennessee now. I think y'all might have seen him last year. We did a podcast, I believe, when it was close to Cancer Awareness Month. And again, guys, we're available to come into any city to talk, to at least bring in what we can to your cities. I've been a lot all over the state of Texas, so I don't mind getting out. Again, we do have financing for traveling but a lot of times I went to Sioux City, they invited me up to teach it, they paid my airfare, my hotel, and my rent car. And so that sometimes that's how we do it, but we don't require that. A lot of times the union firefighters will say, hey, we'll go with the city and we'll pay your room, things like that. So we're not going to lose. Now, it's not like the old days when I first started this. I'm not losing any money. I have a credit card that I can use, but I have to sustain all my reasons and everything.
Does anybody else have any other questions? We appreciate your time.
I appreciate you guys. Yeah, thanks. And I'll text you that lady's name.
Yeah, please do.
And I'll get with you, Vince, or get the doctor's name.
Yes, sir.
So it sounds like it'll be a great program for, you know, San Antonio. And I'd love to see, being in the Metroplex myself, I'd love to see Dallas get involved because of the number of females that are in rookie school right now, mm-hmm. to get them before they go out. So if that's your avenue, I'll send it to you. Because I know Jim's busy. He's been trying to reach her for a month. So thanks.
Thank you. All right, let's take a 10-minute break.
All you do is click on that. It'll come up like that. Just save it.
Yeah, I got it.
All right, brother.
Number.
All right, Curtis. Thank you. Thank you.
Or sometimes I don't know the number. Appreciate you being here. Like Dallas at 1. I'm pretty sure they're
going to wait for them to come back.
Yeah. It's going to work out.
Oh, yeah.
And
then
you want to stay on this side item for a little longer? You want to talk
about it? No, yeah. Actually, we can take an hour.
I'll get it to Grace.
I'll talk to Brian when I get out. Because I think now that she's gone, Brian would be Brian, or Joe would be the contact.
That's fine. All right. Yeah, we probably just do a couple like we did last year.
Yeah, Joe was one of the did one with me, Joe.
Yeah,
we
did you, Joe, Brian, and we did one with
Are you? Yeah, she was the boss.
All right. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Curtis. Be careful.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, so do we need to do action on this?
Yeah. Yeah. And Chief Wisco, I know we're waiting for Deb to get back, but can we go ahead and resume while she's finishing up, or do we need to have her here?
Well, nothing happens here without Deb.
Let's wait for Deb.
Yeah.
It's on.
Because
we'll do something and somebody won't write it down, and then wait. Yeah. Let's just
never happen.
This place, when she retires, this place is just going to fold up.
No, so while we're waiting, though, let me take this opportunity. This is Amanda Kahn. Amanda is our HR specialist right now. However, Amanda is in training because she is going to replace Deborah, because as everyone knows, Deborah's leaving in April, and we can't talk her into staying. So we had to do the next best thing, and that was find somebody to take her place. So Amanda has reluctantly agreed to do that, and so we're trying to train her up before Deb leaves. So she's here today to understand what she's stepping into, and then in January she's going to kind of start doing it with Deb looking over her shoulder. So, because there is a lot to learn, the hardest part is going to learn everything that Deb knows from 31 or 32 years of being here. So, anyway,
Chief, you just try telling her today.
Welcome, congratulations, maybe. You have to put up with Chief Wisco.
Okay, we'll resume. I know we just finished hearing that presentation from Curtis Dunn on item number 3, but before we move on, I just want to make sure the committee knows we have the ability to take action on this. It's already been presented to the commission, and it was received well there, and now it's sitting with us. So if you all have any recommendations or suggestions or a motion, we can discuss it, move it from there.
Mr. Chairman, my take would be is it's an important subject, as important as we've discussed in the past of traffic incident management and any kind of safety issue that we have. I would think that it would behoove us to at least make it, if they see it once, that would be better than not seeing it at all.
Correct. Right now they're not seeing it at all.
No, so. No, and they're not seeing it unless it's delivered to them in person. And I think we could make it available as a CE. I think recommend to the commissioners that it become a one-time mandatory CE or a one-time mandatory training. Ideally, it would really be better for the recruits to see it, or at least immediately after they get out of their schools. Make it a first-year mandatory education.
Like we do with just the traffic incident management,
yeah.
Courage to be safe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it would have to be available online. And like I mentioned before, I think it would behoove us probably to just insert some bullet points in there about that this is an NFPA state, or in some fashion, this is what the rules are that you're supposed to follow. So, especially some of those personal type rules were about transporting gear in your car, which there's a stipulation in NFPA about that, about storing in the station, there's a stipulation, and about cleaning and everything. So that might actually help us in that CE to get our message across also about what the compliance officers are looking for and doing, too. So.
Well, and while Curtis didn't mention it, and it's already gone, I do know that they have already done a train-the-trainer program with TEKS. And if this were to go forward, I'm sure we could work with TEKS to add some information into this and probably be able to make it available on a lot of different forms, both online and in-person delivery and things like that. So I think there's plenty of opportunity here. But, you know, we've tried and proven this already with two other programs. It's worked quite well. So I think it'd be more than beneficial to get something like this out there.
So how would we structure that motion to go to the commissioners? That's what I'm curious about.
I think at this point, they initially sent it back to you all, and we had a problem getting Curtis here that time, and now we skipped a meeting. But I think you just make a recommendation that this become a required training, similar fashion to traffic incident management.
So like our esteemed leader said, I'll make a motion that this program become required training within the first year of appointment for all the firefighters in Texas. One time.
How about the existing people?
Everyone.
Yeah, but your motion is for new appointment.
I think it should be for everybody.
I think it needs to have the same wordage that highway traffic safety. Yeah.
Well, and so if I could point out, with both traffic incident management and Courage to Be Safe, initially I think we did a 5-year span to get everybody done.
Yeah.
And then we put in language about within the first year after that deadline date.
Oh, so, that's right. That's
you're
right.
That's
kind of the model, though.
2022, so you'd almost have to say 27, and then after 27, it would be required within the first year if you want to follow that same model.
Was there a statute that required us to wait 5 years to reach that?
No, I think it was just logistically.
I think that's an unreasonably long period of time.
Me too.
Maybe you do it down to 3 or something like that.
Or we could do, I mean, because I would imagine that most of it's going to be done electronically, I'm guessing.
Can we mandate that? Because we know that the traffic incident management and the Courage to Be Safe are both online. Right. We're aware of that. And right now, it's safe to say everybody that's certified today in the state of Texas, unless they've been employed or appointed within the last 12 months, already has completed the traffic incident management and the Courage to Be Safe. So adding this program into it is really not adding a burden. Right now, everybody has a clean slate on what they're required to take unless they were just hired or appointed.
Well, I think what's neat about at this level, you can recommend any date at this point, and this is going to get debated at the commission level, and we can have a further discussion about adding information and making it available online and the different avenues of getting it out there. So that could certainly, that decision of timeline could be further discussed.
Well, then I would amend my motion to say all firefighters, all regulated firefighters in the state of Texas.
Our fire protection personnel.
Protection personnel should complete this training within 2 years from the date that it's approved, and then after that, how is it worded? Every year?
Within the first year
after appointment. Yeah. Okay. That's my motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Yeah. So, is there any further discussion on it?
do we want, Jim, to add a friendly amendment to yours to include the Texas requirements? The 1851 requirements?
Oh, yeah. I'm guessing we should probably.
Because as a...
So this program will be exclusively online to be presented, and also in the hopes that a train-the-trainer would go out for those who choose to do it face-to-face within a fire academy or within their own department.
Well, so, and I think if you do the just generally require that the training be accomplished, however it's accomplished, it would be up to the individual department.
Right. But the resource will be made available, I'm assuming, on the website, too,
yes.
Where they can pull all the research, including everything that you stated in regards to the Texas vibe.
I don't think that it would take much to
right.
For ours to insert. Just insert. As I was watching I've watched it a couple times, and that's the first thing that pops into my mind. That's a presentation that they take everywhere. But for our state, because we're the only NFPA state in the country for bunker gear, we need to probably insert just some bullet points in there about what, you know, because as I was watching it, there was some places in there.
And the awareness side of this program will also assist us in the reporting requirements in regards to the cancer reporting within our state, and hopefully numbers within our state will be more accurately counted in regards to the number of firefighters with cancers here in the state.
So, yes, to the amendment.
So are we going to house it on the commission's website? If we do the...
We might be going too far with all that. Let's say we want people to get it, and we have to sort all that out. I think we probably need to have a bigger conversation. If it's true that what Curtis had told me, that Teeks has already got the information and we can work with them to insert that might be the better route to go, because they have the availability
sure.
to teach. We don't. So before we go putting it on our website or putting that in a motion, I don't want to do that, because that might not be practical or feasible.
And does Teeks have it as an online?
I'm not saying that. Teeks has been, they've already been through the train-the-trainer. They have the ability. We need to have those conversations. And I don't want to say too much. I have a meeting next week with Teeks about stuff just like this. Mm-hmm. So this might be our trial run after that meeting. But let's don't go too far. Other than if we want to make this recommended training, let's make the motion for that. Let's don't start building a cart until we figure out if we're going to be able to do that or not.
Yeah, and he's right, because I think that I can't imagine that it wouldn't be online in some fashion. I mean, Wildland and all that other stuff's online. But require the training, it'll go to the commissioners, and then in that period of time, he's meeting with Teeks. I think probably you'll get a lot of that sorted out. But we want them to have the training. And I cannot imagine that it would not be online somewhere. So.
I would think any other version would be very burdensome
yeah.
for any agency, especially sizable organizations like Austin and Dallas and San Antonio.
Yeah.
It would be difficult to produce that training
right.
any other way other than online.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to reach the individual certificate holder.
Right. Correct.
That's right. Speaking of an individual certificate holder.
And even an organization like ours, the larger department, we'd have to do that as well, because if you're putting it in recruit school, now you're adding additional
yeah,
timeline to the educational period.
Okay.
All right. Any additional discussion? So we're clear on your motion. Everybody's clear on what we're voting on. We kind of amended it a little bit there.
Deb clear.
We're going to get them to read it back. That's okay, neither do I.
Something to the effect of recommend to the commission to make the program required training within 2 years from date of approval, and then this is the part, and within the first year of appointment.
After the 2 years, then within the first year after appointment.
Okay.
I bet if we looked up the language for,
that would be great.
We'll use the language for the traffic incident management.
Sure.
That's notes.
Of course, that's in transition, too. So.
Yeah.
So that'll have that in January.
Yes, sir. Okay. Any further discussion?
And to include the 1851 requirements.
Yeah, the unique situation for Texas with NFPA.
How did we state that before any of the changes? Because it shows that 1851 and 1852 are going to be 1850. The standard is going to be just 1850, which will affect 1851.
I think we got the gist of it, and we'll use some appropriate language.
Just Texas requirements and not put the code in there so we don't have to go back and change it.
Chief Wiska, I guess we could look at what Teeks has before this is ultimately adopted. And then also, I guess the Health and Wellness Committee may be able to help build that bridge for the current 1851 standards that are unique to Texas to add to the presentation.
Right.
That could be an avenue for us.
Was your meeting with Lohmeyer or Tony or Coatney?
Coatney and Company. But it's on a whole completely different deal, but related.
Okay, so we do have a motion. We do have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 4, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. Would you like to do them each one individually, or you want me to just...
Let's just do it. We'll do them individually.
Okay, so A, Fire Officer 1 Curriculum.
I'm Chris Watson. I'm a member of the... Can you hear me?
No.
I'm Chris Watson. I'm a member of the Curriculum Testing Committee. Pat McCullough was not able to make it today, so he asked me to come to present the curriculum update. The main reason for the curriculum update is to match the new NFPA standard, the 2020 version of 1021. And we also were updating some of the formatting to make consistent the curriculum with other curriculum. If you look at the Officer 1, the first page inside is the overview. That has replaced the old expanded curriculum. We were directed to remove the expanded curriculum, which lists all the subject areas for any voluntary certifications and officers' voluntary certification. So the expanded curriculum with all the subject areas and bullet items listed below are gone, replaced by this overview sheet that just says to use the NFPA standard for developing the curriculum. If we look through the other pages, there's no changes to the recommended hours. We have an equipment list, the skills list, and there's a couple minor changes there to match the new standard. The reference list is updated to the new additions that match the new standard. And the instructor information is just updated to match the standard and to match new formatting for the curriculum documents.
Okay. Ready to move on to B then?
Yeah. Anybody have any questions?
Have all the test banks been updated to the new resources?
That's in progress. This curriculum won't be effective till June of next year, so by then all the test banks will be updated.
Okay, so the next item will be B, Fire Officer 2 Curriculum.
And that's going to be the same thing. The overview replaces the expanded curriculum. The outline, no changes in the hours. Equipment list, the same skills chart. The references updated for the new additions. And then the instructor information updated.
Good with moving to C?
Yeah, unless there's any questions. Okay, we'll move on.
Item number C, Fire Officer 3 Curriculum.
That will be the same thing. officer of the overview, replaces the expanded curriculum, and then the other documents updated to match the new standard in addition.
Any questions?
Item D, Fire Officer 4 curriculum.
And once again, overview replaces the expanded curriculum and the other documents updated to match the new standard and references.
Any questions? Any questions at all then?
Just one question. I'm assuming with all these changes, the skill sheets also got...
Yes. The skill sheets are not part of the packet, but this is hundreds of pages of skill sheets that are updated. There are additional copies of the packet there. Candace has them. They would like to see this. Because we don't have the expanded curriculum in this curriculum document anymore, I can summarize some of the changes, and there's not that many. Most of the changes in the skill sheet were just wording changes to match the NFPA standard. There were a few skill sheets that were changed. In Officer 1, there's a skill for applying a safety regulation, and that had a step added to complete documentation for an injury or exposure. In Officer 3, added a new skill to a skill sheet that's supervising a community risk reduction program. The previous skill was just to identify the importance of it. Now they actually have to implement it. In Officer 4, there was two new skills added to the skill sheet. One is to develop and administer a media relations program, and the other one is to develop a succession plan. That's really the content changes in all four of the curriculum.
Okay. Any questions or comments? No? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the changes to Fire Officer 1, 2, 3, and 4 as second. Presented to by the Testing Curriculum Committee.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
Item number 5, discussion and possible action on proposed amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 437, Fees, 437.15, International Fire Service Accreditation Congress, IFSAC Seals.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, this has been put on hold, so there's nothing to discuss today. Commissioners are looking at a complete review and possible restructure of all the fees, so we're going to hold this one until that is complete.
Okay, thank you.
Move on to item 6. Item 6, discussion and possible action on proposed amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 455, minimum standards for wildland fire protection certification, 455.3, minimum standards for basic wildland fire protection certification.
Mr. Chairman, you'll see at the bottom of 455.3 a new C. The Texas A&M Forest Service requested the commission include this new option of a online hybrid program that is available, and that's what this request is for.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right, I have a motion to approve and a second. Do I have any discussion or questions? None, so we'll move forward. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 7, discussion and possible action on rule review of 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 403, criminal convictions and eligibility for certification.
Mr. Chairman, this might be a long explanation, but the couple things have happened. The legislature reestablished, or the rules changed about rule reviews. It used to be a 5-year mandatory review. It is now 4 years. So you're going to start seeing a lot of rule reviews on the commission's agendas, and those are going to be kicked to different committees at their discretion. 403 in particular is a sunset item, and it's also one of the first rule reviews we're doing. The commissioners kicked it to you all. I want to read the recommendation from Sunset so that you have that in mind while you're reviewing this, because this is a Sunset recommendation that we need to address.
Is this a change from our current language? Is there any changes?
No. There are no changes at this time. This is the rule, and it's a required review. But Sunset has recommended we take a good look at it. So I want to read their language or their recommendation on what we look at. They want us to develop specific guidelines determining which crimes directly relate to the occupation and how, using Section 53.022 of the Texas Occupations Code. Additionally, the Commission should ensure its rules covering procedures for certification denial due to criminal conviction adhere to all requirements in Chapter 53 of the Texas Occupations Code. So, essentially, what you see in 403 are a list of crimes or such that could be used to deny certification. They're asking that, one, we make sure they are aligned with Chapter 53, and two, that they fit, or there are specific guidelines that ensure they fit the firefighting occupation or the occupations that we regulate. So the charge, I guess, or the request from the commissioners are, one, review this rule and make any recommendations, and two, while you're reviewing it, keep in mind the recommendations from Sunset. And as you're reviewing it, try to accommodate those recommendations.
And these are just for convictions, though, right?
Yes.
Is there anything in Chapter 53, since we don't have that, that conflicts? What would our current...
No, but I can tell you that I don't. This didn't come with any timeline from the commissioners or from Sunset. I know the commissioners, we worked to establish kind of a time frame for all the Sunset recommendations. Clearly, this is kind of bubbled to the top because there were so few recommendations from Sunset. A lot of them were management directives that we're able to work on already. So this is at the front, and it, clearly it's already in progress here. So if you all wanted to have some type of ad hoc committee of your own to spend some time looking at this, I think that would be acceptable here, and not just a quick review in one meeting and send something back. So if you wanted to spend some time on this, you could.
So, Chief Wisco, one of the, I know you and I have talked, and I think we've been in several meetings where this has been addressed. So, like this Rule 403, Chapter 403, is there any reference that we have as the last time this was updated or reviewed? In other words, how old of a set of rules are we playing by here?
Well, at the very end of the rule, it will tell you. It won't in this copy, but we're looking in the...
It depends on what section it is.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that would be the next question, because parts of it could have been reviewed or reworded or revised.
2012, 2019,
17. So, and at any time,
even
if there's a grammatical change, it's going to be listed as a
right.
as a change or a revision. So.
Well,
think the last one was the convicted of a sexual nature. I think that was the last change that was made in there.
Yeah, and I was trying to remember that. That's a while. That was like 17 or 18 or something, if I remember right.
403.7 criminal conviction guidelines where it lived them all out was 1999.
Wow.
And that was.
Well, what year, ma'am?
1999.
It
was very discussed at a commission meeting back then that there would be no changes made to that section. And I'll leave it at that.
So, one of the questions I have is I know on 403.9 it refers to mitigating factors. And unless I'm missing it, reading through this list here, it doesn't really address what happens when the laws are changed. And I know there's been some discussion in the fire service and also even through the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, I've heard discussion for years. I know at least when I hired on, if you had used drugs in any form or fashion recreationally, you were excluded immediately. But now we have laws around the country where that's not a violation of the law. You still have, I guess the departments are somewhat treading in waters that are untested as to the validity of saying we're going to disqualify you because you lived in a state where marijuana is legal, but now you've moved to Texas and you admit that you've used those drugs in the past. There was a day where that was an automatic disqualification, and a lot of the fire chiefs are looking towards the future, realizing that's going to need to change in some form or fashion. Obviously, continuing to use them is against most department procedures and should disqualify an individual for sure. But I was just curious as to how that, when the laws change, how do we, I think that, and unless I'm missing something else, that's probably the only law that I'm aware of that's kind of being discussed at length that's changed in my career.
Well, and I know a lot of times legislatively when there are law changes like that, those changes come through here because we're required to update our rules at those times. And so those are specific instances where we have to go in and make changes. But I mean, for the purpose of a review, I would think the only specific recommendation is to correlate this with Chapter 53 of the Occupation Code.
So would it behoove us to recommend possibly an ad hoc committee that would have the various stakeholders that could weigh in with all the necessary information?
Probably. I'd say probably a couple members of this committee, as well as maybe a member or two of staff, certification maybe, because they're the ones going to have to deal with this. I mean, on occasion we'll get departments that report individuals. Usually you get a question concerning an arrest, and we have to tell them, you know, we're not worried about it until it's a conviction, you know, and then sometimes you get a phone call back about a conviction. So it'd probably be best to have some members of the committee as well as some staff, maybe some stakeholders to take a look and do a thorough review of this.
Mr. Chairman, I'll volunteer for that.
Okay. Well, do we have a motion?
Yeah, you probably don't need a motion, but you could probably just make a in your report in January that you're going to have an ad hoc committee and pull together a few folks to do it. You could even ask at the commission meeting, you know, if they want to put a commissioner on there to work with y'all too.
Right. So would this be a so the ad hoc committee, though, that would have to be created by the commission, wouldn't it?
You'd probably be best to ask them to create it, just so you could spend some time on this. I think there's enough value in that, since it is a sunset recommendation. I think we spend some time on this one. It won't take long. It's not going to be like what we've just done with 435 or
right.
427. But I think it certainly warrants some time and diligence.
Yeah, and there's a good chance they could review this and leave it just exactly as it is.
Yes.
That's a possibility. Yeah. We're not rewording the entire document
right.
like we were dealing with 435 and 427.
Don't you think we could do it internally and just have it done by the January meeting? I can't imagine it's going to take more than a day.
I don't know. What do we have, stakeholder groups that would want to weigh in on this?
I mean, I'm just asking.
I don't know if the commissioners want somebody from their side on it.
Yeah, that would be.
And can we even do? Can we create ad hoc out of our group?
I didn't think we could.
No,
so we'll have to go.
Can't. I mean, but they sent it here for y'all's review and recommendation. I think you go back and ask for an ad hoc to look at it and make your recommendations on how it ought to be built out. I think they'd probably welcome that and probably take the advice.
I don't recall, and it may be in there, but is there a requirement for, you know, if you have prior military service, that it has to be honorable or less than honorable? If it's dishonorable, I could never find that when I looked, but I just may not have looked in the right place. I know in law enforcement, if it's a dishonorable, that's an exclusion. You know, you can't be a policeman.
Unfortunately, not. No, it's not in there. There's no provision to say if you got dishonorably discharged from the military.
That's part of the review.
Gaining certification in the state of Texas.
I sure think it ought to be something that we probably talk about at least. I mean, it ought to be part of the review maybe to at least bring that out.
So do we need a motion to make that recommendation to the commission at that January meeting?
If you're going to make the recommendation.
Right.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we recommend to the commissioners on the January meeting that they create an ad hoc committee to look at this with stakeholders from at least from our group, their group if they want it, and staff. And if they have somebody else, any other members they want to put on there, that's fine.
That sure makes sense to me. I second that.
Okay. So discussion, would we want to suggest any other stakeholder groups, like the Texas State Association of Firefighters or Texas Fire Chiefs, to be represented at least with a voice?
All right, it depends on... who's appointed to it. They might be able to do both hats.
Okay.
I don't know who's the VP for Texas Fire Chiefs right now.
I think it's Chief Norman.
Oh, it's Donnie.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so any other discussion? So I have a motion and a second. No further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Item number 8, report from Presiding Officer Daniel DeGeer on the Commission Ad Hoc Committee on Advisory Committees.
Okay. So I'm passing out to everybody here a set of notes that have been used for the meetings we've had. We haven't had a meeting now for a couple of months, so most of what I'm presenting to you here is what has been discussed from this committee moving forward pertaining to the bylaws of how we'll staff the committees in the future. I know there's been a significant discussion because from the sunset we've been directed to create term limits for those who serve on the committees. And I know Chief McAuliffe and I both had spoke in front of the commissioners earlier this year, and we're looking for direction and guidance as to what exactly we would need to do in order to meet that. And we still do not have a guidance or direction from the Committee on Committees or the commissioners at this time. I'm under the impression that they're still waiting for us to weigh in with some suggestions and thanks, Jim, appreciate it, and recommendations as to how that'll play out. So, Chief Wiskow, not misunderstanding, according to sunset, or is this still in
limbo as to what the term limits are. Is it 6-year term limits with one option to renew?
No more than two consecutive 6-year terms.
Beginning in September of 2021?
Yes, September 1st of 2021, which is when the new 419 went into effect.
Okay. So, if I'm not misunderstanding, we're all in agreement that that's just the way it is. We don't have an option on it.
Right. That's the law.
Right. So, the question now is, so how does that look for our committee? How does that also look for the Curriculum and Testing Committee, which are two drastically different committees, in my opinion, having served on both of them? So, I know Chief McAuliffe is not here, and I don't believe Chief Watson had any direction from him either. Yeah, and I was at the last meeting, and nothing was discussed about it because they were still waiting for direction from the Committee on Committees and the Commissioners. And I'm kind of sitting here with the same issue with you guys, not knowing what they're actually wanting us to do. So I think there's still a little ambiguity between who's supposed to be making these decisions. So I know for us, with 9 members on our committee, if we were holding 6-year terms, those need to be staggered in some form or fashion. And if you march out year 1 through 6, the only way to accurately do it is to have one person 1 year and 2 the next, have their positions up for either appointment or reelection. And looking through the notes here from the bylaws, there was a discussion about each year from January to March for individuals to apply. And I guess that would create the pool of folks who would be interested if and when an appointment or a vacancy was created during that following year. And that'll still have to sit with the commissioners as to how they want to administer that. But for us, I don't know what rules or guidelines we should use, or if my suggestion of having one person elected 1 year and 2 the following year would be a guideline. Yes, sir.
So this is just general notes, basically, or is this a
document? No, this is general notes.
This is not a document to follow or anything?
No, there's not been approved by the commission yet.
Speaking on behalf of the stakeholder group, one of them, I think we probably should take at least a meeting to digest this and really look at it hard. And then, you know, be a little, rather than just seeing it today first glance. And,
right.
Yeah, I would like that. I would prefer that.
Well, right now today it was just a discussion to at least bring you up to date. We're certainly capable of making a motion, but I somewhat agree that maybe at least going to the commission meeting and updating them that we're discussing it and we're at least aware of it, but we need time to vet out all of the little nuances that have been changed here.
So the committee that are affected by this are the 5 that are listed A through E under standing committees. Right there on section 2, it says standing committees. They have the Firefighter Advisory Committee, Curriculum and Testing Committee, Health and Wellness, the 427 Rule Review, and I'm assuming those are committees in the 435 Committee. Are those all standing committees that are affected by this?
Well,
I believe so.
435 is an ad hoc committee, isn't it?
Yeah, those are just ad hoc committees.
And so is 427 is an ad hoc committee.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
Okay. So the ones affected by this is the Curriculum Test Committee, Health and Wellness, and Advisory Committee.
So far, correct.
Well, technically, any committee, the term limits apply. No committee is going to, you're not going to be able to sit on a committee. A committee could be appointed, an ad hoc committee could be appointed, and last forever.
Okay.
But there will be term limits. So the commission can have as many committees as they want. What's listed are committees that exist at the time they were taking these notes. So they have the ability to create as many committees as they want. As they create those committees, if they put end dates on them, which is required,
They can, but there are term limits for all of those committees. Yes. The 419 is written. It doesn't name committees any longer. There are no committees named in the law. It just says the commission can have committees. Committee members will be subject to term limits. That's what the law is. It's straightforward. So the commission can have 1,000 committees, and committee members have term limits.
So that would include all the ad hoc committees?
All committees. Okay. All committees have term limits.
And I have a question. Committee composition should have representatives from each fire service stakeholder group with emphasis on department, size, region, and mission. What is that?
Where are you reading that, sir? I'm sorry.
Section 3 eligibility.
My understanding is that's a caveat for the commissioners to make a decision of what those definitions actually apply.
Oh.
So that'd be criteria that they would use in making those decisions. For y'all's benefit here, I know on page 1 at the bottom for our committee where it refers to a firefighter advisory committee, none of that verbiage is changed. That's word for word what currently existed regarding our committee. The only thing that's changing is when you go up before that under Section 1 General, where it's referring to the term limits. And that's from Sunset. So that kind of concludes my report as far as where the committee on committees were in regards to our committee. I think there's a lot of questions still to be clarified, but at this time I believe the committee has stopped meeting and is taking this to the commission to see where they weigh in on it. But what they don't have from us or from the health and wellness, I'm sorry, the curriculum and testing committee is a direction of what it would look like for term limits. So what I'd really like to hear from you guys is what you view that to be or what your thoughts or suggestions would be as to how that would look playing out.
Well, they would definitely need to be staggered in a sense, and I think of the learning curve of any individual entering any committee is, you know, in advisory committee there's a 1 or 2 year adjustment to understanding the committee per se. And so I think that when you lose a good bulk of people within the committee that understands the committee, that's been part of the committee, that has a lot of insight of what has been done and what has been created, I think it's important to have as part of that committee, and we hate to lose them all at one particular point.
And I think we have so much natural attrition on the committee that it'll be staggered. At least when we start, it'll stagger itself. So I agree with the staggering and the term limits and all that. But you know, it'll stagger. But yeah, you don't want to clear everybody out all at one time. That would be crazy.
Right.
And I know that the commissioners don't want to do that because I heard them verbalize that. So.
Sure.
But I mean, I think if you look at our past history about when people came on and when people got off. I mean, there's already a natural staggering that's going on.
But I completely agree with that. But as far as term limits are concerned, we've not ever had defined term limits.
Right.
So when you come on the committee, it's not that you're mandatorily here for 6 years. You can leave a month later, or a year later, or 2 years later, or any time in that process. So the question would be, so does the apple cart just get all upset and whoever left, they count and we're good to go? Or what happens then when an individual reaches beyond 6 years
when does their position come up? And we don't want them to all be on the same year. So the only way to do that is to adhere to the position should have a defined timeline. So in other words, each of our nine positions should be assigned somewhere in the next 6 years to be either re-upped or replaced. And if anybody leaves in the meantime, then that term would just be filled for the rest of that term. It wouldn't be an immediate 6 years. You would fill out that term and then be eligible for renewal when you reach that timeline. That way, it would still look the same 10 or 20 years from now that it does today, as far as the positions.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Because, I mean, shouldn't happen, but it could happen. Half the board quit for whatever reason or something happened, and now all of those would be expiring at the same time if we did it the other way. But the way you just described, to me, does make some sense. So whatever that position's term limit is, that is now then when, you know, they would fill the rest of that term. And
correct.
Then, yeah, that would, I understand what you're saying now.
That's what the commissioners
do. That's what commissioners do, right?
Yeah. That makes
sense. That's exactly what the commissioners do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So ours should mirror that.
Sure.
Because it's not confused. It just becomes a managerial tool to adhere to.
It's just going to be difficult in the start. That's all.
Right. Once we set it forward, there won't be a problem. So I think that we're going to have that growing pain as to, okay, whose position do we put where and when.
Right. Right.
And I know we have a set of dates. Every one of us have been on here for a different length of time. I don't think anybody has the exact same hire date or appointment date, I should use. We've discussed about just using an attrition from who's been on the longest to the youngest to fill those dates. But that's still up to the commissioners to make that decision. I don't know if we can make that recommendation to them. If I did, I would want your understanding and your input. I don't want it to be mine. And that's kind of what I could use from y'all, is to what you feel or what you think would be a good way of moving that forward.
If I may,
yes, sir.
If I remember correct, and just feel free to put me down. From Company and some of those guys, wanted your input as to how we're going to follow Sunset. No question asked. What's your recommendations for the way that you're tiered now from term or length of time to fit that if the commission went, not saying we're going to or not going to, if we go, okay, we accept that, or no, that's not going to work. This is kind of what we were thinking. But your own input from your own committee, you know, and we know that we've got some turnover, and had some turnover. I think we've got three or four people sitting in the wings right now that have already been approved to fill any position on this committee for a year, which will come up January, February, you know, the event that you had to hold now. But like you said, whoever's been here the longest, that's where that day will start. And then they'll tier from there, like you're discussing, you know, Mr. Anderson, you said you've been here 3 years or something like that. You know, so he's halfway through, possibly, if that's the way you want to set that up. But that's from what I understood from, and there's a lot of commissioners that's on that committee, student committee. What your thoughts are to run your committee, and your committee only, and then they will take that as a recommendation, or we will take that as a recommendation. So you bet that fits right exactly what Sunset said. Not that, I mean, that's just your opinion of how you need, you know that you don't want to, we don't want you to clean house. You know, we've been a pickle, you know, beyond a shadow of doubt. But we got to kind of follow the rules that came down across the street over there. Let's start this process, and if anybody comes to look, they go, oh, okay, you're doing what we asked you to do, you know.
Well, and that's
why I've been here the longest. I've been here the longest. So, and I love you guys, but I'm not staying 6 years.
Well, so like we had the options. We could do three positions every 2 years during that 6 year period of time. That's an option. We could do. There's other ways of doing it. It seemed like we had at least one person eligible each year. That would probably be the
most.
Well,
we have to take into consideration, too, as far as what I would consider. We went through, when we started the process, did y'all have a position or two available? So we set out the paperwork, you know, and it took forever to get that all together. And then we had another committee that met on the phone to start weeding it down to get like four or five. And then we brought those people in during a work day, you know, a workshop, and started actually interviewing them. Some of them had three, you know, and traveled miles and miles and miles. And
and then we tier that down to the final four, the final five, you know. And that, I think there was, well, I don't remember the name, but anyway, so there's still some sitting in the wing, but it takes a long time to put together just to fill a position.
Right.
If we continue to do it the way that we had in the past.
And the part I'm not clear on, or I'm somewhat confused on, is it appears like each year you would interview a selection of candidates who would be eligible, but remember, it's not that you are leaving. It's not for 12 years that you have to leave the committee. If you serve two consecutive six-year terms, now you definitely know you have a vacancy, but between now and then, there's not a defined vacancy.
That's if you're reappointed after your six.
So with
whose determination is that? Is that going to be the commission?
It's the committee. It will always be the commissioner. Yeah, it will be your committee that determines that.
Well, if it's going to be like us, it's not our option to be reelected or reappointed. It's the governor's, you know.
Right.
And most of the time, after the 6 years, we're gone. There's only been one or two in the last how many years that someone has been selected 2 years back to back, back to back term.
Oh. There's been quite
a few.
Yeah.
That's the only thing with the 1-2-1-2. It creates work on staff to put all that together every year, creating a list. So if you did it every other year.
But the 1-2-1-2 wouldn't be a 6 year term. The 1-2-1-2 would be, like, when does that 1-2-1-2 start? After the 6 year?
It's a 6 year term.
You don't want to create a revolving door here either.
Right.
So that's not productive for anybody, not the commissioners and not the firefighters.
Where my confusion is, so let's say my term is in what, it pick a year. Am I eligible for reappointment? And at the same time, are you interviewing candidates who would take my place? But then you would be going through all of that work, having folks apply, whittling the list down, interviewing those lists, just to tell them all, you're reappointing me again for six more years. That seems like a lot of work. That
I think y'all are getting way deep in the weeds here.
Okay.
I think what Commissioner Hamilton said initially is right. The commissioners are asking y'all to offer some kind of suggestion how the nine of you fit into the next 6 years as far as a term. And they want you all to recommend what your term is going to be. However y'all want to make that look.
We'll go around the room and just see how long we'll be here. Jim said less than 6 years. We know that.
63. I love you guys again. I'm not going to be here in 6 years.
I won't be here in 6 years.
I won't either. So.
<There's> I won't either.
So you got 6 years to figure out how all nine of you are going to come up for the opportunity to be reappointed. I think that's the best way to look at this.
Swindle won't be.
So essentially, are they saying that, or are you guys saying that you want us to say, okay, meet Daniel, Jason, we'll do 2 years. And then the next three will do 2 years. And then the next
They're looking for that suggestion from you guys, or that offer from you guys. Hey, this would probably work the best. And I think everything that you're saying is valid. You don't want to throw everybody out at once. You certainly don't want to create a revolving door, but at some point you got to squeeze nine people into a six-year rotation here. It doesn't mean everybody's leaving. It just means they're up for reappointment sometime in the next 6 years, knowing this is going to be painful the first time out.
Yeah.
The other given is the clock has already started. I mean, we're 2 months in the hole, or 3 months in the hole already. Because this started September 1. So, I mean, we're already at a disadvantage on this. They're just looking for y'all's input because they value what you do, and they don't want to just throw everybody out and start fresh because that's going to be complicated.
Yeah, so I've got the list here. Okay. So, Jim's the senior. I'm second. Jason, then Ken Swindle, Daniel Buford, Keith Schmidt. Actually, you and Daniel did come on at the same time. Then Daniel Anderson, and then Antonio in seniority.
And Reedy, you've been on here a long time.
God dang. Oh, that's a pot calling the kettle black there.
I've only been here 2 years, dude. What are you talking about?
After half a lifetime.
Yeah.
I believe if you had your time and my time, we still didn't have as much time as Wisco did. So that, if we were going to use succession planning from like the senior to the junior, that would be the order of the list. Now, whether we plug it into the 1-2-1-2-1-2 formula or something else that y'all propose, that's up to y'all as a suggestion or a recommendation to the commissioners.
So does it have to be three people every 2 years?
No, it doesn't say that. Unless you see that somewhere where I'm not.
No, that's what I'm asking. That's why I say I'd like a little more time to digest the whole thing and rather than, you know, as far as gears and whatever. So, I mean, obviously I'm going to be one of the first ones to go. So.
Well, the question is...
We don't meet again.
Yeah, but we don't meet between now and then. So. So the question is, so if we started with you, Jim, is that meaning that they're replacing you, or is that meaning you start your first six year term?
Or second term.
No, first term, and somebody will replace you halfway through, right? Or
well, they're gonna have to start at some point. Someone's gonna say, well, is he gonna stay or leave it at year six, and there needs to be a replacement at year six for anybody who leaves after the first term if they don't get elected the second
term.
Well,
and I think in general, asking somebody, are you going to stay here that long? I mean,
none of us know, right?
That's not right. I mean, that's like asking somebody, are you going to try and be a commissioner coming from the committee? I mean, we have how many committee members that went up to be commissioners?
I think that's a good question, and maybe what might work best is you recommend when to establish that start date. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but at some point we've got to establish a start date for everybody. And since the law is already in effect, we need to establish that start date sooner rather than later for everybody. I think the commissioners are wide open. They haven't made a decision. They haven't said everybody's date's already started, and some of you are fast-tracked, and you're in your first 6 years, whether it's 3 months or 6 years. We just need to establish a time frame for a start date. So I think maybe looking at it from that way, you take them back some suggestion. Here's when we'd like to see you with a start date, keeping in mind maybe by position, by stakeholder design. Firefighter versus instructor versus chief officer versus investigator, however you want to make that up. Because, again, there's no outlined committee makeup any longer. That went away as well, other than what you're seeing in their notes that they're discussing. So, I mean, you could recommend that as well, you know. So
The statute still has certified fire protection personnel, 6, right?
No. All that went away.
Oh, okay.
It just says the commission can have committees, and the committee members will have
terms. This here is gone.
This is their notes. This is what they're considering doing. So, I mean, if you all wanted to do something along those lines and assign positions, like you were saying 15 minutes ago, so that the firefighter position is starts here, and there's 2 6-year terms. And if Jim were to leave in the middle of that, somebody would fill it, but that term still doesn't expire until this day. That way they're not all cycling out together or off path.
We've had this discussion before. You're the perfect example of this. So
yeah.
You came on as a firefighter.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So if it's a firefighter position and you ascended to a chief officer mm-hmm. position, does that mean you're out?
That would be the decision of the commissioners. But, yeah, I mean,
I think the commission would use that as an evaluation tool.
Sure. I mean, you're right. That's a great example. And that's happened with a lot of folks over the years on this committee. You know, they start, I mean, look, Lenny. I mean, Lenny started out as a firefighter, worked all the way up to fire chief. I hate to say I followed Lenny's steps, but I did, I guess. We both did the same thing.
So,
Alanya started out as a fire chief and left as a dinosaur. You know? I hope he's listening.
So if I understand the sunset law that we're having to adhere to, This new set of timelines started September 1st of
2021. Yeah.
You can serve a 6-year term.
It'll start when this rule becomes final adopted.
Yeah. Oh, not till it becomes adopted.
Yeah, because they have to set out.
Yeah, they have to establish the rule.
How are we going to do this?
Okay.
And this is going to be...
So nobody's timeline is on the clock yet?
No. You're still serving as the new 421 that was adopted last week.
Okay. So and it's saying you can only serve a 6-year term and then one re-up for another additional 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then you're definitely off the committee. No, I think it said you could come back at another time, right?
After 2 years.
After 2 years.
Well, you can. I mean, but there's no guarantee they reappoint you the first time up.
Right,
you know?
Right. So, but that law from Sunset does not address pre-existing time served.
No.
It doesn't distinguish between Jim's seniority and Antonio's seniority. And that's hence the reason we're all discussing this is how we're going to massage that in.
Yeah, and that's why the commissioners have asked for your input on how to start it. Where do we start?
Not just y'all, all committees.
Yeah.
Bring
yeah.
something to us that you think would fit your rules.
So.
And as many commissioners as there are, if they all agree, I can't answer that.
Right.
I'm not on that committee, whatever it's called now.
And in my position, I have opinions and views, but I can tell you right now, it's a total mess in my own head as to how we move forward. So I'm using y'all as to see what suggestions we have as a committee.
Well, at some point, you're losing 2 to 3 every year within that 6, because you're going to have to get, because somebody, I mean, within 6 years, they're either going to be reappointed or not. And if 3 individuals are not reappointed after the 6 year, well, then you 3 people down with 3 new people, and that kicks in. You know, the time starts on those individuals. And at some point, we've got to define who's the first to go and how is he going to replace. And if that person who's the first to go, will he be reappointed? So it does become kind of confusing in a sense.
I mean, one option is we could start with the term limits, 1 year to 2 years, to one person for the 6 years, starting at the date whenever the commissioners finally make that decision, and the first person still has 6 years to serve. Well, that wouldn't work, would it? Because then the last person would not be addressed until year 12.
Right. So, I'm curious. So for the newer guys, are they on the clock or not yet?
Nobody's on the clock yet.
Okay. They want you to tell them when your clock starts.
My clock typically starts about 8:30 in the morning.
You know, but I guess I echo what Vince said. I mean, you really, that 6 years is scary to me a little bit, just because. I mean, I was fortunate when I came on. I had a lot of guys like y'all that had a lot of years of service. So whenever we got into some more of the harder subjects, y'all could tell us what maybe had been talked about, how, you know, some things. Y'all brought a lot of knowledge to this that, again, if we're swapping them every 6 years, we're going to have a whole board made up of folks that maybe, you know, 2-3 years, maybe 4-5. But, I mean, it's a little concerning, I guess. But, I'm sure the commission deals with the same thing. But
firefighter personnel, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've been here long enough to be settled in things for 6 years and still.
Right. And you got to elect a president or what, or a presiding officer out of that group, you know?
No,
and
well, we have variations, and this is off the wall, and I don't know why it is or what it is, but if we were to add to that committee, would that even be feasible to take that up 3 more people?
Oh.
I mean, we're allowed to do that by law. We can go up to 15, I think, in one state. So if we added 3 more, their time started at that point in time. And then we shuttle this, however y'all decide to do it, and then make the click. So where it's going to rotate. But we know that the three new to come on, if that's feasible to whoever, that helps with the transition process, to me possibly, that you got three new ones and get 6 years to deal with. And then we'll start picking and choosing, and y'all decide how.
So,
I mean, sell it against the wall. Sticks to build up.
You know, so with that in mind, I mean, if we went to, say, 12, now we're talking about two per year, right? So, you know, and the recommendation of the group was that as long as we have two every year, so through attrition, if we lose two,
at the 12,
you know, then we wouldn't maybe have to, you know, I don't know if you could set it up that way, but then it would kind of help you keep some folks that might, just depends on how it goes, they may be here longer than that 6 years or something. You know, or you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's going to get a little complicated, obviously, again. But as long as we're replacing two every year, whether it's someone that just gets off or whatever, then it would help you keep some of these older folks in here for a little while. They got some knowledge, possibly.
Well, the attrition will happen, but it can't be the solution to the problem because you can't predict that or manage that in any consistency. That's why we're suggesting if somebody did not complete their term, whoever took their place would fill out that term, and then that way we'd stay on the same page. Also, if I'm not mistaken, if we couldn't have 12 members of the committee, it either need to be 13 or 15, right?
It has to be odd.
Or 11.
Maximum.
But it has to be an odd number, yeah. So, yeah, so if we went with 11, it'd still be 1 year. It would be one person instead of two.
You know, you could go with the 2-1 model and ask that on one or two of those years where there's one, add a new member that year. So it's 2-2-2, and then you still have 1 year that there's one to keep it an odd number, right? Just to keep some balance in there. But you're never getting rid of, you're never going to see the replacement of more than two people at one time. So you're not losing a lot of history, if you will, or
that knowledge.
Yeah,
sure.
Is the commissioner, without looking, are they on 6 years terms?
Mm-hmm.
If we go to 13, that's what they have. Why not just use their dates?
You still got to have a start.
You got to have a starting point. But when, if you do 13, you're going to add, you're going to add four people. Well, there's a start date for whatever that date is. They're new dates.
Would you want that meeting on the
list? I don't know. I don't see a flaw in that. I guess one of the concerns I have is, I know, like the most recent vacancy we had, you had a significant pool of individuals who applied for those positions. But there's not a guarantee that that's always going to exist.
I tell you the one thing that would be accomplished if you added members to this committee, if you took it to 13. Let's just use that number. There has been a recent, we've all heard it, there's a recent push for the metro cities to have more involvement. You could certainly increase that. You could certainly increase the number of ESD departments because there's more and more of those coming. You could increase their involvement at this level if you added some more seats. So, I mean, the opportunity exist to expand how many people are involved here.
And some of the stakeholders off our back.
Yeah.
You know, they want this, but then we put out the information to come be part of it. Nobody shows up.
You know. Right.
Glad to hear you say that.
I mean, you know, and I've been around a long time, but you can know what's going on. You know, you see and hear a little scuttle here, a little here, you know. And I'm the same way you're talking about. You know, I've been in fire service for 50 years, but at this level, no. It's a daily learning deal.
Sure.
So the increase in numbers within our committee would come as a recommendation from us, or it would come down from the fire commission?
It would come from y'all, because the commissioner committee did not send that to you as an option. I did mention it, but just as a bystander, it's just as somebody,
Well, obviously, I agree that adding members to this committee would certainly appease groups of individuals who may feel like they're underrepresented. I mean, it would just be more players in the game, which I can't see a negative side to that. I don't think that absolves us, though, from the question of, like, with Jim and myself as the senior guys, so are we in the last year of our 12th year serving, or are we in the first year of our first term serving?
That's where you guys are going to put your two cents.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have to get the last five bullet, I guess, because if you're going to go with your younger gentleman, you know, well, then we got three here, so he's got three more possibly. That's the way you set it up. You're going to add four. But those four, are they going to be at the six-year stagger? And then you're going to start staggering the rest of them to fit what Sunset said you will do.
Yeah, so I kind of reading between the lines, realizing we can't all start our six-year term today.
No,
so
we're right back where we started.
Right. So somebody or some of us are going to have to realize we're at the end of our term. So I guess as the committee, as a group,
but as far as you're concerned, you two could be. Well, you both said you're not going to be here six more years. We don't care about. I'm not going to say that. I shouldn't say that. The person actually warming the chairs. Okay, you know you've been here, and I don't want you going anywhere. But the warmth is coming from somebody else. But that chair's got a six-year term.
Right.
So we're going to put a six-year on you, or you're in your fourth of your sixth or whatever. That's just your position. If you stick and want to be real, you know, I don't know how you want to do it. But, you know, not specifically against you.
Could we not do the terms and say, with the committee we have here, with the 1-2-1 that you talked about, we'll take y'all two. You'll be in your sixth year. In the next year, we request that those are automatically done for that next 6 years. So then I'm next. I'm at five. So in 2 years, mine comes up. Mine gets automatically renewed. I'm going to say request for renewal, since we're here, for the next 6 years. Now, if we don't make those 6 years, our term limit still ends, just like you talked about, and the new person comes in and does three or four and then fills in. But that at least gets us going and doesn't kick us off the committee next year.
Yeah, and I think that's what we would have to work out as a committee, because hypothetically, and Antonio, I'll use you as an example because you're the newest member of the committee, but hypothetically, you say, you know what, I'm only going to be here for 2 years, and then I'm going to vacate my spot in 2 years. So we can move you farther up that list because you know you plan on leaving in 2 years. Now, I'm going to guess you don't have a date or a plan, like most of us do, right?
I have no plan. I don't even know when I'm retired. I could have retired 10 years ago.
Are you laughing?
Sorry.
So, but if somebody knew that they were getting ready to leave in a very near future, then we could use that position
to
ease the pain.
Somebody's going to have to take the number 6 year, and we would respectfully request that the committee, we put that end date on there, but that they reappoint us for that next 6 years. At least for this group, to get us started and out the gate. And as we well know, if the two of y'all get in that first spot and you get reappointed for 6 years, you're not going to make it. But at least that's a starting point, and then you'll get two new people in that has y'all's end date, just like the commission does.
Right.
And Antonio, he would start his 6 years, but he's brand new. And we would just go.
So if I'm understanding that right, then what we would be asking is we would be asking the commissioners to help us massage this for the first 6 years.
Correct.
As we massage it in, and then to Jim's point, we all know that somewhere in that 6 years, there's going to be just natural attrition.
Correct.
That could affect half, if not the entire group. But by the end of that first 6 years, everybody clearly has that term limit defined.
But
right.
To Commissioner,
I'd say four or five of us are going to
be
gone.
But to Commissioner Hamilton's point, it's not Jim, it's Jim's chair.
Right.
It has a date on it.
Right.
whoever sits in that chair has that date. But we would first request, like you said, a massaging through this first process so that, you know, next year we come in and they just don't get rid of six of us.
And that would also help, I would think, the commissioners with the, are you going to interview a group of folks? How big of a group do you have to interview? How many people do you have to get on a list? It would buy you several years to figure out how that's going to play out. Because right now,
we've already got four sitting in the wings that we've already gone through and then given them. They have a one-year holding pattern in the event that one of y'all quit or left or for whatever group. We would have to do that again for a period of time.
Yeah, because now you'd be able to, but now what he's saying, you'd be able to forecast that, so you'd know how many you'd need for how long of a period, so you wouldn't have to do it as often.
Right.
Yeah, because you could forecast what you're going to need where.
Right. And you could make they could interview and make the list last for 2 years.
Sure.
Just
like a hiring list.
Because I sat in on that process, and you guys put a lot of work in. I mean, it takes a lot to vet out all of the plethora of candidates that applied.
And like Mike said, you know, with all the new ESDs, and, you know, everybody wants stuff to be in on the deal. You know, I don't know how you set up and write the criteria to submit an application, you know. And I don't know what you used last time, but what did we end up with? How many applications?
Oh, there were 64.
64 applications.
Yeah.
But we always have ended up with a ton of applications, but there's a very large percentage that don't qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did this. I mean, we went through and we interviewed six, maybe?
Yeah, five or six.
Something like that. I don't remember whether you were here
for that. I was here for that, yeah.
So you know that.
Yeah, it was an all-day process after you finally got to the interviews.
Yeah. And we didn't give them about 30 minutes each.
Right.
But still. All day. It took a while.
But that also would give you the time for those other rules we were just referring to where the commission is going to look at rank and size of departments. And because we've had folks on this committee also who've changed departments over the tenure. And that would play into the demographics of the committee. So in the future, then they could make that decision, hey, we need more of a representation from a specific group.
Whether you want about population or whether you want about, you know, right. I don't know how.
Well, and by adding the new positions, because for me personally, I think the ESDs is a good example. We have zero representation from ESDs right now. And by at least creating some new positions in addition to what Jason is suggesting, that seems to be the most likely win-win situation for everybody.
Well,
but that's just my opinion. I'm needing y'all's opinions and our consensus.
Well, if y'all don't, most everybody knows. I mean, I've taken on a different role as well, and I'm still unclear on, you know, was my position as a volunteer chief, if that was a position on the firefighter advisory as a volunteer chief or just a volunteer. But if it's volunteer chief, you know, in short term, I'll be no longer the chief for our department. So, I mean, that's going to free up a spot if that stays that way or whatever, then for y'all to, I mean, that takes care of one spot. I obviously love the work that we've done and feel like we've all had some success. So, you know, it'll be hard to walk away from it, but still, I think that's what would need to be done there whenever I'm no longer chief, which will happen sometime here in December. So, you know, if that'll help free up a spot, obviously, then that's taken care of. I just wasn't clear, and when I read it here, you know, it said the member must be a volunteer chief or a volunteer firefighter. But I was thinking back in the day it had to be a volunteer chief.
Of course, all that's gone now.
So,
yes, I'm believing they're suggesting that it could be a chief or a firefighter.
It's always been a chief or a firefighter.
Right.
The deal was that a lot of the guys were two-hatters on the committee that they did volunteer and chief. So, but typically, it's always a chief has always gotten the chief.
But none of that existing.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, I mean, my intentions are to continue to be a volunteer. But again, guys, I'm available to do whatever works best for the committee. You know, I can surely step down here now, today, whenever, if that's what's best, or I guess I'm at y'all's you know, it's going to be hard, I think, for anybody probably to leave it. So, I mean, if we need to have somebody leaving right away and that fits a need, then let it be me.
Well, but what Jason said, we should put that down in writing somewhere and work off of that model and, I mean, and add some people to them. I think adding people would be fine. So
the problem I guess,
with us is that everybody comes up here and comes up on their own, basically. So it's not...
I mean, this is a report, so I'm not so sure that it takes action other than just give you guidance to go back to the commission with.
And I don't have a problem speaking in front of them. I just want to speak on a consensus from us as a group.
Well, then I'll throw this out here and take a consensus nod, I guess, is that we take your 1-2-1-2 and put the names down to top to bottom in seniority.
Or applying his scenario in case he's going to step down.
But he doesn't have to.
Yeah, but if he's choosing to,
like I said, yeah. I mean,
I would just take us as we are today, in our list. Add the four more people. And
while you're doing that, where are they going to fit in? Where are those four going to be? Are you going to add two from?
I think right off the bat, I would say add two year one, add two year two. So we've already got them staggered, so we don't have to wrestle with that.
Well, there is no area anymore. So I think
that would be awesome.
You've got to have six members from a certain area, and three members from a certain area, and one.
I don't think that's what's in there. That's not in there anymore.
That's not in there.
It'll be at the demographics that the commission decides.
I think we're looking at two issues. One is our seat numbers, and then one is the criteria. So let's do. I would recommend we do one first.
Yeah.
So with that, and then
we're going to have four new members. Have them start the first year, and then that'll give us 2 years to stand around.
Well,
I like to keep the years recommendations to do 2 1 year and then 2 the other year because they already naturally or yes. They already started their right stagger on those individuals.
You want to do 2 by
now? Go to 11.
You've already got them.
So if we end up with 13 folks who are cycling out every 6 years, there'll be 2 each year, and 1 year there'll be 3.
Well, I'm saying if you want to do that, from what we did. When you were attending, we gave those people 12 months, which is not up. If we have people sitting ready that have already been interviewed and authorized to be on the list to take a position.
And that would work because they would start that next year in the new term.
Yeah.
Well, we could even make it to where they started September. We just got to call them.
I don't think we can do that.
I mean, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
Like
so, with that being said, I'm still throwing this out.
Contact those individuals and see if they're really thinking. Because we put them in lists, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's still so, let's do 2. If we do that, we can do 2 a year. So, the 2, then it's y'all 2 are the first 2. Swindle and I are the next 2. And we just ask the commissioner to help us massage this out that. Y'all are basically starting your second 6-year term. So now next year we'll have 1 year here in our first year term, our fifth year of our first year term, and then we'll move to that, and we'll just work it back. Does that make sense? So everybody technically would be in our first year term, with y'all being the senior. Swindle and I would be the next. Whoever the list is on that, and then the new people will be the starters, and then the next year they'll get that, and we should rotate out.
I think we'll still need to marry them up with a term that balances out the 6-year time.
Well, you will, because you're going to move. Going to have some holes down on the bottom. So they're going to come in year 2 or 1, but they'll still be in their first year term, first year of the 6-year.
And I'm assuming recommendations would come from the chair to this commission. committee, to the commission, of these people are up for renewal, and we recommend that they be renewed, or you recommend that new
Right, I understand that. I'm just wanting to make sure I have a consensus of everybody to make that recommendation, a suggestion. And likewise, I know you have a list of folks that you interviewed earlier this year, but just my two cents worth, I think that list will come to expire before any of this happens. It's up to the commissioners on how they want to
extend that a little bit or start that process.
Well, the question I would ask you all is when you started that list a year ago, you only had a committee of 9 and no term limits. So I don't know if that would play a factor into the next time you interview folks as to what demographics you'd be looking at to be adding new seats to this committee. I'm just throwing it out there. If I was making that decision, I could very well say I made a decision 10 months ago who was going to get appointed, but now you're telling me we have other interest groups that could possibly take a seat. I may have made a different decision at that time. So that's why I think that as a commissioner, I think the commission needs to make that decision.
Correct.
So I don't think it's automatic that we'd be appointing 2 people. I just want to say that in case the folks that are listening right now to this meeting are on that list, not thinking, okay, great, I'm going to get appointed here in the next 2 months. I don't think that that's a sure thing.
I don't know what the committee will do.
Right.
That could be a recommendation from you.
Well, but I think by adding new members to the committee, we're going to change the demographics of the committee, and it's not going to be our call as to what that looks like. It's going to be the commissioner's call as to what that ultimately looks like, especially knowing we're going to add 2 more even farther down the road. Does that make sense?
So you're going to go for 13 or 11?
I think the suggestion, I don't think if we do all 4 in 1 year, I think we have the same problem we're wrestling with right now.
Right.
Is how are we going to stagger those out? We can't do 4 in 1 year.
Well,
and also one of us.
Well, no, if you're doing 13, you're squeezing 13 into a 6-year period. I mean, there's going to be a year like that.
Well, it'd be 3 in 1 year, not 4, though.
Right.
4, 5. Because right now we'd be saying 5.
Well, we would all push up. And then the new people coming in will be on the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. If that's your suggestion.
Well, they're right. 13 would get the stake to some of the Metro Chief Group or whatever, and then ESDs. But I will say this, and I don't mind it being on the record. It should be really certified fire on this committee. I would think so. We need volunteers on the committee. It should be a certified firefighter. It's just my opinion. I mean, we regulate firefighters. We regulate training officers, but we regulate firefighters. This is a technical committee, for lack of a better term.
And from probably the guy that, and I would agree with that. I mean, it could still be volunteer, right? But he still could be regulated, you know. So he's in a department that is regulated, at least. And even y'all can take volunteer departments and regulate them. All they have to do is request it.
Santa Fe is a perfect example of that.
You know, but you would think they ought to have to be certified. That, to me, that makes some sense, because, I mean, if they're not, and we're talking about changing IFSAC rules or something, I mean, I don't see how they would care, you know. But if they're regulated, I think they would, you know, or at least certified through the commission.
Well, this has been a painful, uncomfortable discussion.
Well, I think at least we've come to a consensus so that I can speak in front of the commissioners and represent a voice from the actual committee.
The only other thing I'd chime in would be, like I say, if we've got and I'm just saying it so maybe I can hear myself say it, but if there's a pool out there that we could pull from. And so if we went and pulled 2 or 3 or 4, depending upon, you know, maybe say no more than 3, if they're available still, and we took those 3, and like you say, so that, and let's say that we said that their term started in 2021, or depending upon if it's 2022, then so now they're good for 6 years, and then we look at 2023, and we say we need to have, you know, one or two, and we just all start to put our names down on those years as we plan out the next 6 years. You know, the three would be the three new, so that takes care of this first year, and he's already got those people sitting out there, so we would need to bring on one more in next year to get us to 13. Does that make sense?
You'd have to do two and two, because otherwise you wouldn't have even. You'd have even number.
Well, with 13, though, they're saying there's 1 year that is three. So why couldn't it be this? They come in either in 21 or 22. We bring those from his pool. We brought in three new, and now their date is 6 years from then. And so then the next year, we go through, and typically every year then thereafter, I mean, we're gonna be pulling two out, right? So, I mean, I'd say, okay, well, my year is going to be 2023. And so we know my term expires in 23. And just go around the room filling in those spots. And now my
revolving door, no matter what.
You know, but at least we've decided my position, I'm not staying any longer than at the end of this period. You know, now if something happens to me before, it is what it is. But we could possibly do it that way and go around the room, because I mean, chances are we could all say, well, you know what I mean? If these young guys, they may be good. Maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe they're out 5-6 years. You know, but some of us maybe hold out shorter, you know, because I sure don't mind taking one of the quicker turn. You know what I mean? Whatever it takes to make this be better for everybody, I'm good. I just don't know. But, I mean, like I said, he's got three or four in that pool, but we know we wouldn't want to lose. If you go to 13, you'd lose three. And am I saying it right? And then every year after that, it would be two.
Correct.
So if you bring them in, I mean, they'd have to put it on a calendar, but if you brought those three in, whether you say that their term started in 21 or 22, that's up to y'all or up to the commissioners. And so now we know their time circle, they're good for 6 years from that date. That's unless something else happens. And then we look at the following year, say 2023. Okay, we need to lose a minimum of two, right? And every year thereafter. And we could all sit down and say, I'll take this year and you take whatever.
Actually, if you brought in two, they would tie up Antonio as their first year, because that would give you your three. Because right now, if we're 2, 2, 2, 2, and being the odd person, there's a one. Him being the new person is at the tail, just one. If we paired us up in two.
Well, with nine, if I'm not mistaken, right, it's 1, 2.
Yeah, but if we did the 13, which is 2, 2, and 2, you bring two more in and pair them up at the same date. Antonio,
because he's a 21.
Mm-hmm.
I follow. Yep. So then now, him and those others are 6 years from
them.
From them, because he's the youngest.
The only thing with the current pool does it meet the criteria of the ESD and the.
But that hasn't
been messed
up.
That's up to the commission.
Yeah. So.
But I follow what you're saying. That would so for, you know what I mean, that's date certain. We bring in two more, tie them to his, so their date would come up in 2027 is when those seats would become available. And then we go back to 2026. And which ones of us, which two pick 2026, which two pick 2025? Which pick 2024? You know what I mean? We back our way back into it.
I think you just start at the top and go down and just ask the commission if they'll honor.
Either way.
That's the easiest way versus us having to pick and choose and do all that.
Yeah.
And we just put us up there. We'll say we're in our first term of the 6 years. So we can have something on paper and request that when our time comes up, we'll graciously request that they reappoint us for that next 6 year term. That way, there's nobody, they're not getting rid of anybody up here.
Is
a date on the seat. Yeah.
And that would help with the new people coming on, too, to at least have us here to help with that for a couple years at least. I think put it down on paper so Daniel has the notes when we go to the commission meeting. So I'll be at the commission meeting, too. So Jason, you're normally here, too, right?
Should be. The second in command is that same day, so it's a Wednesday.
So, Chief Wisco, we don't have to have a motion to go forward with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can we take a break?
Yeah.
I'm good with what we discussed, and I know that I'm on the top of the list. So.
Well, we all, the three of us are.
Yeah, we all know where we're at on the list, so. Okay, if y'all don't mind, can we take a quick break and then finish this up? I know it's lunchtime for everybody, but we're already at the height of rush hour.
What's that?
What do we got? The next report I have should be very short, but then I know Chief Wisco has a...
Mine will be short.
Okay, and then it's just our calendar dates for next year. So can we take a quick five-minute break and then just come in here and finish this out?
Yeah.
And I've got to.
All right.
I've got to leave.
Okay.
Coming along. All right, five-minute break. What a brother you are. What a brother you are. I had a guy come in with a chainsaw, cut it up, carry it out of here. That one next to you probably still works.
Good.
Okay, we'll resume the meeting. Just a quick note that Chief Collier had to leave, so he's been excused from the rest of the meeting. So just to make that note.
Need to take any further action on 8?
I think we're good on item 8. Anything anybody else needs to add?
Okay. Item 9, report from Presiding Officer Daniel DeGeer on the progress of the Commission Ad Hoc Committee review of 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety.
So this will be a lot shorter process here. I'm just updating y'all. I actually share the notes that Commissioner Jones had been working off of. This is an older version. This was the one from the October meeting. There were several additions and revisions made to the bottom part of the paragraph. I'm not asking for action or a motion at all from the company, from the committee here. I'm just trying to update y'all and let you know that we have been meeting. We had a significantly long meeting yesterday. Commissioner Hamilton's been a part of the process. Also, besides the 435 committee, there's a committee for 427 that's been reviewing those documents. And I know Commissioner Hamilton's been involved with that committee as well. And we did have a meeting maybe a month or 6 weeks ago where we got both committees together to try to iron out a couple of things that were a crossover between the two. But there are some significant changes that have been made in here. We forecast that there'll be some contention, especially on the two-in, two-out rule. Well, there were significant changes made there. But most of what we've done is, and Jim, I know you've been on that committee as well, it's just been to kind of clarify and clean up the document so it reads a little bit better and it's more on par with everything else that's in our rules. So, Chief Wisco, do you have anything to add? Because I know you've been a participant in both committees.
I think the committee did some good work. They're going to finish formalizing all the recommendations in one document, and that'll be presented at the January commission meeting, which will certainly be a proposal, a first-time reading, and lead to a lot of discussion and back and forth. But I think overall, a very good process, healthy process.
Yeah, and it's been great having both Commissioner Jones and Commissioner Hamilton participating, and they've been there all along through the whole process, and I think that it's been a great exercise in working with the various stakeholders and groups. So I think it's been interesting at times, but at others, overall, it's been a great progress for the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. That's really all I have, unless somebody else has a specific question. I just thought I'd let you see some of the notes and some of the revisions that were being made and notations.
Chief, in regards to that program we discussed earlier on the cancer, it would be introduced into the firefighter, the 435, correct?
I would think that's where it would sit, because that's where the courage to be safe and the traffic incident management already reside. So. And there was, just to update you, and I don't know if it's appropriate, but it's at least to share with the discussion from yesterday, there was discussion on should the courage to be safe in the traffic incident management be a one and done for your career, or whether or not that should be revisited at some sort of a timeline as you go through your career. In other words, should you need a revisit or a refresher? It already exists, and that's one of the points that was made, is any chief can choose to include that in their continuing education on any given year. But the question is whether or not the commission would mandate that, because we already mandate it sort of as a standalone program when it could have been added in from day one by any chief who wanted to add that into continuing education. So obviously the commission as a whole feels it's important enough to mandate that everybody go through the program. But the question I raised was, is it, you know, our rookies are taking it within 1 year of appointment, but it appears right now they don't never need to revisit those subjects for the rest of their career. And the question is whether or not that should be revisited, and also what that would look like if something was done. No decisions have been made on that at this time.
Also, Chief, on 435-31, is that something that's added? I know it says here, near miss reporting, Daniel.
So we ended up basically deleting that yesterday. I withdrew it. We were discussing about life safety initiative number 9, which requires that a investigation and a report be generated on any near miss or critical injury or line of duty death. And the reality is a line of duty death always ends up getting that done to start with between NIOSH and the State Fire Marshal's Office and even the commission. But when you get into those other subject matters, especially within my own organization, it's hard to define what's a critical injury and what isn't. What's a near miss? I mean, some can make an argument there isn't a fire or an incident we respond to that there's not a near miss somewhere in the process, just driving code 3 to the scene. So, you know, obviously an investigative report does not need to be generated on every near miss, but I think where there's something to be learned or something that's significant or newsworthy, then that's where we probably need to revisit that. But once again, that still sits underneath the courage to be safe. And I'm still waiting to hear from Chief Kistner on any suggestions he had, because in my recollection, he's been the most passionate person about that life safety initiative number 9 for a number of years. But I had originally tried to look at maybe inserting it in there, but as of yesterday, we removed it. So there is no 435.131.
Yes,
sir. Yeah, right now that we removed that yesterday. What you're looking at is a document that was from October. So we made more revisions to it yesterday. There's nothing prohibiting me from forwarding that to the committee members.
No.
Whenever I get that update from Commissioner Jones, I'll forward it to you.
Remember, the near miss, Chief Kerwood told us that the near miss for MFFF is done.
Yeah. So I think that's something we should look at somehow, some way, and see how that impacts us. Because I was not aware of that until yesterday.
That was news yesterday.
And I'm working for an agency that participates a lot in the near miss and line of duty death reporting. I think that's troublesome to the industry, personally. Other than that, that's all I have on that item.
Item?
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. And that's this month, December 14th and 15th. And it's here in the conference room, right?
Oh, it's here.
Oh, it's here in this room?
Right here.
Okay. Great.
Item number 10, update from Mike Wisco, agency chief, regarding recent changes at the agency.
Well, this will only take about an hour. I just wanted to bring you up to date on...
with food? With lunch?
Yeah, no food. You can think about food. No, I just wanted to catch up real quick on some changes here at the agency, just for your edification. So a couple of organizational changes. First and foremost, we made a few title changes, trying to fit into the fire service a little better so that people can relate to us a little bit more. So my title changed from executive director to agency chief. We now have a deputy chief position, which is Cliff Grant. Cliff is over all the professional standards. So that's compliance, certification, training, and we put public information under that because most of our information that gets pushed out has to do with professional standards. And it also was a position that we needed because of a state rule that I really can't be involved in immediate decisions about particular things until they are contested, if you will. So, because I have to be the final judge and jury on that, so I can't be involved in them when they're making the preliminary decisions. So, anyway, Cliff is the deputy chief. We changed our division managers to division chiefs, so certification division, compliance division, things of that nature. We had a retirement. Paul Maldonado retired from the compliance division chief position, so we promoted Rick Wallace, who's in the back of the room there next to Cliff. Rick's been with us for a number of years as a compliance officer up in the north part of the state, and now he is in charge of the compliance division. So we're working to fill that vacancy, and at the same time, we reclassified a position within the agency from a curriculum job to a compliance officer. So we're adding a compliance officer position. At the same time, we're bringing back Region 1
which for a number of years had been, I'll say, browned out. And the other officers were just picking up the work. Region 1 is right here in Central Texas, Travis County, Williamson County area. So they reworked the region map a little bit. Everybody's got a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller accordingly. And so they're working to hire two new compliance officers that we hope will start in January. There'll be some training time there, and there'll be some new faces around here. But the reality is the compliance officers carry quite a burden. They do a lot only in compliance, but they also do a lot of our testing out there. We still deliver paper tests that require proctoring, so the compliance officers end up picking up a lot of that work. And it was just more work than what six of them honestly could keep up with. So we added back that seventh position. And at the same time, the compliance division chief, Rick, will still have some compliance duties as well, inspections and test delivery and things of that nature. So we're trying to enhance our operation there a little bit and try to be a little more productive on that end, to be a little more responsive. As Cliff moved into the deputy chief spot, we replaced him in certification with Tara Youngblood. Unfortunately, Tara had some changes in her personal life, and she had to leave us because she moved back to Oklahoma. So we're working to fill that vacancy of the certification division chief right now. Hopefully we have that filled here, and I'll say in the next week or so, I hope. Let's see. As far as office operations, you know, since COVID's been going on, we've been working remotely. To be quite honest with you, that's worked rather well. We've had one challenge that existed before I even got to this job, and that was our telephone communications. That was a big complaint. We believe we've resolved that issue, and we found a way to make that work, even with folks working remotely. Citywide, I say the Austin metro area, saw a big change or improvement in traffic and all, so we have been encouraged to continue some model of telecommuting, and we're going to adopt that. We've got a new model, so the agency as a whole will continue the work-from-home model, if you will. There'll be people in the office. There'll be people working from home. It'll just be kind of a hybrid of office operations, if you will, but it seems to be working effectively, and we're getting our work done. So you'll notice that, but our phone communication capabilities should be noticeably improved in the next month or so with this new technology we're using. The other big thing in the last year, we have really stepped up our game as far as meeting with our stakeholders. We started our regional meetings. We had 11 of them. This is where we're going to the different regions of the state. And we're listening to the stakeholders. We want to hear their complaints. We like to hear the good stuff, too, if we're doing something right. Luckily for us, there was quite a bit of that. But we managed to pull off 11 of those. At the same time, every stakeholder organization that has some type of event, they've been gracious enough to invite us and give us an opportunity to speak and to listen to them. And there was a number of those. Got a couple more this month already going on, and we're already scheduling in the next year. So we're going to continue that because it's worked very well. And if there's something you know of, an organization that has something or has a desire for somebody from the agency to be there, either to catch up on what's going on here, to listen to some complaints or some thoughts, we're open to do that. Just reach out and let us know. We'll have somebody there, whether it's me or somebody else. Certainly not getting the smartest guy when you get me, but if you need somebody smart, we'll send somebody that's capable of filling that seat. So really, that's it. I just kind of wanted to catch up on what was happening around here. We appreciate all that you guys do, and encourage that continued work on this end. But that's it.
Does your website reflect the changes yet?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 11, subjects for future agenda items.
Anybody have anything?
I'm sure we're going to have some stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure stuff will come up between now and then.
I mean, coming back from the 4-H
435.
Right.
Yeah.
And the 427. And the committee on committees.
Ready for item number 12,
sir.
Future meeting dates.
So I know, Deb, you've given me some dates.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read them, you want me to read them to everybody, or do you want to read them? Why don't you read them to everybody for us? And so for myself personally, the 10th is a better date.
I guess I could do the 10th. 17th is St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
In Austin.
I have a plan.
In Austin.
Everywhere, I think, not just in Austin. I think it's St. Patrick's Day everywhere. I think it's St. Patrick's Day everywhere, not just in Austin.
So is everybody good with the 10th?
Austin is
a cycle. Oh, yeah, it is.
Deb, we're good with the 10th.
9 o'clock?
Yeah, 9 o'clock's fine.
Okay, and then June 9th or 23rd?
The 9th is best for me, but I don't know which y'all.
The 9th is the NFPA CE convention.
Okay.
23rd would be better for me. But
23rd better for you too? Okay. 23rd is better. Is everybody good with the 23rd then?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, the 23rd.
September 15th or 22nd?
What's good? I'm better with the 15th. I know we have three members not here, so we're assuming that they would. Jason said he was good with the first dates on all of these, but I don't know about Chief Swindle or Daniel Buford.
I'm good on either one.
Is everybody good with the 15th?
Yeah, good.
Okay. 15th.
And then December the 8th or the 15th?
Once again, Jason said the 8th. I prefer earlier in the month because the later in the month, it's getting into the holiday for sure. So, in the past, it was always difficult when we had them mid-month. I prefer like the first week even, but the 8th is the Thursday before that was not available?
No.
Okay. Are we good with the 8th? Or?
I am.
Okay. We'll go with the 8th.
Item number 13, adjourn the meeting.
I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, everybody. Y'all have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Good.